Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, March 30th, 2018. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday. Cliff Schechter will be here to look back on the week in news. Also on the program today, to do God knows what, H. John Benjamin, best known as the voice of the Majority Report, and then does some other voice work here or there. Also on the program today, Trump fires Shulkin, looks to privatize the VA. Parkland students Ether Laura Ingraham. Robert Mueller seemingly gets closer to proving or at least tracking collusion. Russia to expel 60 U.S. diplomats. Roseanne Barr and her conspiracy theories now champions of the right. Meanwhile, the Trump administration claims the U.S. will withdraw from Syria. Maryland passes automatic voter registration. And a postscript on the omnibus budget bill. Bernie apparently got a half a billion new dollars for the Social Security Administration. Oklahoma teachers score a shocking and awesome win. And Boston climate activists score an important ruling in their trial that never was. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Now, what's going on? Could you turn up my sound a little bit? For whatever reason, it sounds a little bit. I don't know if it's I now have some post pneumonia clogging of my ears, but it sounds a little bit muffled.
I don't know exactly.
I don't know what's going on with
that. I can't hear.
That's true. It's weird. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know what happened.
It's probably just a little congested.
Having some type of episode. All right, ladies and gentlemen. I should tell you this. So last night, this is just, you know, we used to do Name Drop Fridays. So we used to do around here, and then I ran out of names to drop. And my life became so narrow that I couldn't, you know, how many times can you talk about someone you met 25 years ago? And so that got a little bit old. But I took my first, I don't know that I've ever done this. And I've met a lot of, you know, I've had the opportunity to be around a lot of like well-known figures and some celebrities and whatnot. But I think last night was the first time I ever took a selfie with somebody.
Hell yeah.
In my entire life. And so I was called in to do Chris Hayes's program to talk about the firing of Shulkin and the possible privatization of the VA. And when I got there, they told me, oh, you got bumped. And they bumped me later into the program to talk about something else because they got Shulkin. Who apparently they felt knew more about his firing than I might, which, okay, look, dubious, but not a completely out of, you know, not a completely unforgivable mistake. But the good news was that meant that I was hanging around in the, not so much the green room, but the staging area type of situation. And who walks in but a guy who's going to be a guest on the show later, and it is Carter Page.
Hey, hi, Sam.
And I find this guy fascinating. And a lot of us do here. And I was, you know, texting back and forth with a couple. Today's guest, John Benjamin. He texted me. He goes, "Are you going out to dinner with Carter Page?" And I took a picture of both of us. And I said, "Yes, we're going to the Russian Tea Room after the show." And but I started getting into a conversation with him. And because he heard me talk about the privatization of the VA, that's what I was supposed to talk about. And he goes, "You know, that's exactly what happened to me." And I was like, what do you mean? And he goes, "Well, the privatization of the CIA and the FBI. And I'm like, "The privatization of the CIA and the FBI? And he goes, "Yes, with the dodgy dossier." And he called it the dodgy dossier to me.
I did. And it's the dodgy dossier.
Yeah.
Did you like
that? We
were
just saying, it's like, it's if you run into like one of those, like a sitcom character who does his catchphrase, it would be like running into like Jason Alexander and I'm going, yada, yada, yada.
Would it be cool if he was like that? He's like, "All right, look, kid, what do you want?"
Oh, I met
Henry. Okay, got it.
I met Henry Winkler last night, and when he saw me, he was just like, "Hey." And so he's telling me like that they privatized the CIA and FBI by using the dodgy dossier. And I said, well, that's not really privatization, isn't it? I mean, isn't privatization, I mean, like, cause we have the FBI and the CIA, they use contractors, but they commission them to do jobs. Privatization is that they commission them to do jobs that the government was doing prior. Are you suggesting that the FBI or the CIA commissioned someone to do the, and I said it, dodgy dossier? You know, you want to speak in the local parlance.
Want to share the circle.
And he said, and he was like, he just sort of like stared at me like what a strange question to ask. And he's like, it's possible. Maybe.
Was he saying it like, "You're evil and I hate you"? Or was it, like, "Will you be my lawyer and my friend?"
Honestly, like, and then if you watch the interview with him, he like completely seems like, "I had no idea you were going to ask me questions." Like, there's that quality of it. And when he came back off of doing his hit, he comes up to me and he's like, "I said that part about the privatization." And I was like, "Oh, okay." He's an interesting fellow.
You have been the Edward R. Moreau of this whole process.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And here is, and we should put up, the picture. I'll send it to you. All right. And meanwhile, Donald Trump is, where was he? In Ohio.
Moreau.
And he is very, very excited about the reboot of the Roseanne show. As you know, Roseanne Barr was had a hit sitcom in the 90s about a blue-collar Illinois family. It has been off the air for 21 years. My old buddy, Johnny Galecki, was on that version of the show. I don't think he's going to come back for this one. And on Tuesday night, it aired. It had a really particularly by today's standards, where it's very hard to find an aggregate of viewers, 18 million people. Wow. And now, as you know, if you've been following Roseanne Barr's politics over the past 20 years, they have gone, I wouldn't even know if I would characterize them as right or left as much as I would just say bizarre. And she, in November, she was all into the QAnon thing, the QAnon on 4chan.
Oh, the thing that Binder explained? That
yes,
thing? Oh,
right.
Wow.
That was, she actually was like attempting to contact QAnon. But here is Donald Trump last night. And this is fascinating because, you know, stuff like this is what keeps them. I don't know that there's anything that could shake Donald Trump and his followers out of like a sense of like we are the silent majority.
Never minority.
They are the not so silent, well entrenched 38%, I would say 32 to 38%, maybe a little bit less, but they are not going anywhere. And when they start to realize like 18 million of us watch this 1.5 hour sitcom, this is a revolution. This is what he's talking about.
I got a call from Mark Burnett. He did The Apprentice. He's a great guy. He said, Donald, I called just to say hello and to tell you, did you see Roseanne's...
Hey, pause it for 1 second. If there was ever any doubt that Mark Burnett was a piece of garbage, I hope that we've put that to rest. I mean, I don't know that people were debating about it very much, but he's got those tapes, and he has not released those tapes on Donald Trump, incidentally. He didn't do it before the election, and he's not going to do it now.
Did you see Roseanne's ratings? I said, Mark, how big were they? They were unbelievable. Over 18 million people. And it was about us. They haven't figured it out. The fake news hasn't quite figured it out yet. They have not figured it out. So that was great. And they haven't figured it out. But they will. And when they do, they'll become much less fake. May take a while, but it's happening.
What? Yeah, the revolution is upon us. And I love it. It's all about us. It's about us. As if, like, Donald Trump shares anything in common outside of perhaps maybe a certain amount of racial animus with some of the people in his audience.
I move to make Roseanne the fourth branch of government.
Honestly, what are the odds that if Roseanne's show ends up lasting only a year, that she is not in the cabinet by year three or four of his administration?
No odds. She will
right?
be.
I mean, and we'll talk about this with Cliff, but apparently Donald Trump fired David Shulkin via Twitter. According to Shulkin,
I love it. That's his second. That's because he did that
We'll play it. We'll play it last night because it's pretty amazing. We'll play it. I'm sorry. We'll play last night's clip with Cliff. It's pretty amazing because and Hayes has a pretty interesting theory about what happened, and we'll talk about that with Cliff because we're going to take a quick break and we'll get there right now. Just a reminder: this show relies on its members to exist. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. All right, quick break. Come back with Cliff Schechter.
We'll be right back.
We are back. Ladies and gentlemen, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Friday. And on Fridays, the one of the ways that we recognize a Friday, occasionally we will blow the shofar, but my soundboard is down right now to celebrate the upcoming Shabbat. Another way that we will often celebrate Shabbat, and this is a tradition that goes back to Eastern Europe from, I believe, the 1500s, before way before emancipation, 300 years before emancipation. In Germany, of course, you would often hear people sing this song.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is Good Friday. It is Pesach Eve, afternoon Eve. So what?
All that good stuff in one.
What better day to welcome Cliff Schachter to the program? Hello, Cliff.
Hello there, Sammy. How are you?
I am doing well. I am doing well. I should remind folks that you are also the host of co-host of the podcast Unprecedented. Available on iTunes, and we're going to be talking about this. There's a little bit of controversy in these parts, as you know, Cliff, about a recent guest that you had on, and we will talk about that a little bit later.
Nothing if I'm not a causer of controversy.
That's true. You are a one-man controversy machine, and we will
just a wrecking machine.
We will talk about that in a bit, but let's start here, okay? Because yesterday and I don't know. I guess it's not really too much news that Donald Trump has now fired the 40th or 50. I don't know how many people it is. But here is David Shulkin. Some people are lionizing him in a way that I'm not terribly comfortable with. I mean, I think he, in addition to having, you know, spent, I don't know, $4,000 or $5,000 on sending his wife to Europe. I mean, relative to the rest of that type of corruption that we've seen in this administration ongoing, not the least of which with Scott Pruitt, that stuff is sort of small potatoes. I'm also
And quickly, not to interrupt, but it's not just Scott Pruitt, obviously. It's Ben Carson. It's your $30,000 dinnerware sets, and it's your Zinke is another one, your $130,000 doors. I mean, it's everywhere, which is not to defend Shulkin, by the way.
Right. No, it's everywhere. Corruption. Just interesting what I mean, I don't think that's the reason why they let him go. And I am a little bit, it's very hard to know how it works in the administration. But I can tell you that there was concern about Shulkin being on board with privatization of elements of the VA as early as the summer. Now, it could very well be that he was taking certain steps just to seem like a team player. And then when push came to shove, he wouldn't allow for the privatization, or he wasn't on board with it. And that's why he got fired. That's also very possible. He wrote an opinion piece in The New York Times yesterday claiming that that's why he got fired. But what was also fascinating, last night Hayes had him on, and here's Shulkin talking about that. It's what's also amazing, he's talking about the fact that Donald Trump is this guy can't fire anybody to their face. It's unbelievable.
Well, I spoke to the president yesterday.
Here's that clip Hayes and Shulkin.
I spoke to the president yesterday.
What was that conversation like?
We spoke about the progress that I was making, what I needed to do from a policy perspective to make sure that we were fixing the issues in VA. Very focused. He was very inquisitive about the things that we were working on, making sure that we were focused on the job at hand.
Wait, that's before you were fired?
That's correct.
You spoke to him. He made no mention of the fact that he was about to terminate you?
That's correct.
And then you found out via tweet?
Yeah, right before that, the chief of staff, Kelly, gave me a call, which I appreciated, gave me a heads up. And so, but that was much after the phone call.
What was the president receptive to the what you were saying on that phone call as you were updating him on the improvements you say you were making at the VA?
I think that the it was a normal conversation with the president where he asked me what was going on. This is not atypical. I gave him the updates and told him where we were focused, and he had questions about that. And it was.
So we have this situation where clearly that was the phone call he was supposed to fire Shulkin, and he chickened out in the conversation. I mean, that's probably why he was so inquisitive. Like, so David, how's things going over there? Everything's good? yeah, that's great. And then he gets off the phone.
What's the office looking like? Can we fit new furniture in there if we need to?
And then he gets off the phone, and Kelly looks at him, and it's clear that, like, I couldn't do it. I couldn't say.
You know what's amazing to me is, like, so many other things that have come out about Donald Trump are not in the least bit surprising, right? I mean, we knew a lot of this stuff going in, that he probably has, I think, every bad trait a person can have that I can think of. You get through and list your seven deadly sins and go through all sorts of lists. But I really thought he actually could be good at being an asshole. He's not even good at that. Like, he's a failure at being a dick.
Well,
it's incredible. I mean, he can send out these mean tweets because he's separated from people, but he cannot look like that whole show, his whole TV show, his whole, you know, the Apprentice, that garbage, wasn't just based on a fraud that he was a good businessman and has a clue what he's doing in the business world and didn't just inherit a lot of money and find various ways to fuck up and lose most of it before getting bailed out by people who want to launder money through his condos via shell companies, but like he can't even fire people. He sucks at that. You'd think he could at least be good at being an asshole, but no, he's incompetent at that too.
Look, you're not necessarily an asshole because you fire somebody because you want to move your organization in a different direction, or their skill set is not what's appropriate. But what's amazing is he doesn't have the courage. He doesn't even have the courage to do that. I mean, that is that. I'll give you my take on the Apprentice thing. The fired thing is his. Like, he knows deep inside he's too afraid to do that, and so the opportunity to do it for fake and like as part of a TV show, and of course with people who are like, they're not really your employees; they're game show contestants. This is a window into his
window to who he is
psychologically. This is a guy who cannot actualize in any way and has to engage in cosplay to just like basically run his business properly. It's very strange. It's very, very strange.
I think when we're talking about him, it is sort of that specific failure. Because, I mean, what you're saying in general, yeah, sometimes people have to fire people for various reasons. But he's a guy who wants to fire all sorts of people, as we've seen in this administration. He doesn't fire people the way normal people who run businesses or governments fire people when they're either failing at their job or there's insubordination in some way or the various other reasons. If you're in a business, you sometimes have to do it because you lost a big client or whatever it is. He wants to fire people and be an asshole because they didn't kiss up to him enough, or they didn't do this that he wanted. You know, they didn't, you know, pass on some illicit contact to him so he can find a way to monetize whatever he's doing. I mean, the various people he's pushed out for a variety of reasons, usually bad reasons. And what I'm saying is, he can't even, to use what you said, he can't even bring that to actuality. Like, he wants to be an asshole to these people. He hates them for various reasons. There are plenty of great reasons to fire people in his administration. But if you were firing people based upon great reasons, would John Kelly be there? Would Pruitt be there? He's not. He's firing them based upon other reasons. Like they don't suck up to Donald Trump enough, you know. And he can't even do that. He does not even have the courage to be a dick. He has to have either somebody else do it or do it via. I think it explains a lot about him. You know, I mean, where this anger comes from. That you see from him on Twitter and other places is because he's such a weak person. Like, I always thought the self-loathing was for all sorts of reasons. Daddy didn't really like him. He was a failure at business and he kind of knew it and all this other stuff. But clearly, like, he hates himself just for his own personal weakness. too. So it's like add that to the repertoire of crazy.
Yeah, it's fascinating. All right, and then let's talk about who he is now planning to nominate to be the head of the VA. The physician.
I got to tell you, I was sad because I was hoping it would be that cool doctor with the long hair.
His old personal his non-governmental personal physician. But instead, it is literally the guy who gave him his last exam, as if it's like, I feel like I can trust you now. You saw me naked.
And he's like, wait a minute, how much do I weigh? Is it 267 or 237?
But it's
237, sir. You're hired.
It really is a bit of a concern because there's no this guy hasn't had. I mean, look, it's the exact same thing as Ben Carson at HUD, right? And maybe this guy is actually going to be a little bit more competent on some level because I guess presumably he's had a staff, but this is a massive bureaucracy. And this is a guy who has no administration, as far as I can tell, no administrative background whatsoever.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, what is there to say? You know, I mean, but I guess what there is to say is, yet again, sort of competence and understanding the position or having any background in that position, you know, or anything related to that has nothing to do with why Donald Trump hires people. Just like, as we just said, it's nothing to do with why he fires people. These things are unrelated. It's why he's gone bankrupt five times. And I'm not just saying to take pot shots at him. It's why he's failed as a businessman. Because presumably, from everything I've read and seen, he's done the same thing forever in his personal life. He hires people that tell him what he wants to hear and tells him he's awesome and he's the best and tell him that he weighs 237 pounds and not 269 pounds. And, you know, things that these are the decisions he made. I mean, Rex Tillerson, you know, we can talk about the fact that he worked for Exxon, but beyond that, had no qualifications to be Secretary of State. Ben Carson had no qualifications to be at Housing and Urban Development. You know, Nikki Haley, a governor with no foreign policy experience and sent to the UN. I mean, these are just off the top of my head. I mean, we keep going. There's no relationship between sort of having a clue what you're doing. This is Trump runs everything in a crony capitalistic fashion. It's what can you, he is the center of the universe. He is the Sun King. What can you do for me? What can you say that's awesome about me? You know, that's it. So, I mean, I guess I'm not shocked by Ronnie Jackson. He's not qualified to be there, but he's no worse than Ben Carson at HUD, you know, or Rex Tillerson at State. Like, he's just another in a long line of reasons why it's incredible that we're living in this world where this guy's president of the United States.
Yeah, it's disturbing. And I guess really the question, too, will be with this pressure to privatize the VA, what will Ronnie Jackson do? I mean, I'm sure the guy has the ability to say, like, oh, yeah, no, I'm on Team Trump, and then, you know, pushes back. It's very hard with guys who are active military to get a sense of what the agenda is here, right? Because on some level, you're asked by the president to do something, and you're active military. You have to do it, or you have to resign from the military. And you know, just about everybody else who takes a position in the administration, my first thought is they're definitionally incompetent and a bad person. Because at this point, like, no person who was competent or self-aware could look at what has happened to anybody else who's gone into the administration and think, like, this is going to work out well for me if I'm someone who values, like, things like self-respect and integrity, and nobody's going to go into this thinking like I'm the one who can make a difference because they've seen everybody else who is even remotely attempting to do something like that get summarily dumped. So I think anybody who takes a position in this administration at this point where there is not some type of like extant possible explanation. I'm military personnel. I'm being ordered by the commander in chief to take a position, and I'm going to take it. or let's say, I don't know, my kids are being held hostage they have demanded that I take this position, you know, something like that. But outside of those two scenarios, I can't imagine why anybody, what rationale a competent, thoughtful person who was ethical would join this administration at this point.
Right. Well, I mean, even for the most sort of cynical reasons people would join. I mean, apparently, you know, coming out, maybe I've missed it and something's changed, but coming out of this White House, Sean Spicer was trying to get all the usual sort of goodies you get after being a, you know, right, after being a spokesperson. And the TV stations, which I have to admit, I was pleasantly surprised.
I was very psyched about.
Yeah, psyched about what, you know, because it's like we're, for some reason, we still have Chuck Todd inviting Corey Lewandowski on Meet the Press, you know, and so service for Trump clearly is not a complete disqualifier, but it seems like at least for right now, the people that have worked in this White House, there's more of a difficulty in terms of coming out and getting the usual goodies. And I you know, but listen, there are people that want to be the people that are motivated by different things, which, or the right wing movement as it is, wouldn't exist than what most of us, I think, are motivated by. You know, I mean, there's pure sort of whatever it takes to be famous and whatever it takes to be, you know, to be in power or have power over people. So, you know, I can't pretend that I understand fully, because I would think anybody who had any kind of reputation they cared about at all would run away from this. I mean, it's beyond just that they're conservative, you know, and incompetent. Like, it's such a mess, and what's going on with Mueller, you know, it gets a little closer every day. And that's only one of 14 different scandals going on. That doesn't include, you know, or I guess maybe Cambridge Analytica has been wrapped into that now, but there's that, and there's Stormy Daniels. And I mean, it just goes on and on and on, the various ways people can end up in prison or end up at least under oath who are close to Donald Trump.
Yeah, I just don't think a reasonable person at this point. I mean, I think there's certainly always going to be people who are going to join the administration because of the type of people they are. But I just don't think that anyone who is ethical or sensical would get themselves involved in this stuff. But all right, look here, I want to play this clip, and I want to just change, because this is also sort of fascinating. We heard earlier from Donald Trump praising Roseanne Barr. Well, I want to play this video of Allison Camerota interviewing David Hogg, who apparently, I'm not sure how it came out, that David Hogg, one of the Parkland students, didn't get into the schools that he was applying to, the colleges. And mm-hmm.
He admitted it publicly in a few places.
Here is an interview
about him. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's an interview though with this. And this is in response. This is after a shakeup with Laura Ingraham. And, but we'll get to that tweet in a second. I want to play this video and listen to how mature this kid is in his response. It's sort of, it's just amazing. And then we'll get into this story, because this gives you sort of like a context.
David, I am stunned that four colleges rejected you. What kind of dumbass colleges don't want you? I mean, you've taken the country by storm. How do you explain this? Did they reject you before the Parkland massacre, or how do you explain this?
They rejected me about 2 weeks ago, most of them. It was UCLA and UCSD. The way I explain it is, we have a heavily impacted university system in America, and I think there's a lot of really good candidates that don't get into college, and I think it goes to show that regardless of whether or not you get into college, you can still change the world. The hardest part is just believing that you can and continuing that effort to change the world, because you eventually will.
I mean, the guy has like a sort of a very, I don't know, I don't know enough kids to admit, but incredibly mature disposition.
That's the thing that's so amazing. Like, all of these kids from this school that have come out are just, they're incredible. They're so much more mature than I am.
It's not disturbing.
To say that I'm incredible, but I have to believe that compared to Laura Ingraham, and people of her ilk, like, I'm way up on the scale compared to them. And these kids are far beyond me. So compared to like Laura Ingraham and people like that, it's not even, there's no match. Like they've sort of exposed it, because here you have these 17 and 18 year olds who just, you know, 6 weeks ago, whatever, experienced seeing their friend gunned down. And they're literally out in the public eye when most of them probably had never been in any way before. And they're handling themselves, and they're in such a way that's so far superior than the way Sean Hannity could ever handle himself, or any of these people who all they can deal in are sort of cheap attacks and insults, because they don't have anything. They can't debate Dana Loesch. She can't debate these kids on the merits, because all she has are sort of, you know, Pizzagate conspiracies and lies and smears, you know? I've been so impressed by them, I can't even say.
Over the past week or two, we have been covering the various attempts to discredit these students. Ben Shapiro talking about how his presentation is not good. Rick Santorum saying these kids, all they're doing is going out protesting and learning CPR. So presumably they can provide like on the ground medical response to these shootings. I mean, there's been relentless attempts by the right. And so here is I'm going to read off the tweet that Laura Ingraham wrote, which basically she wrote out a tweet: David Hogg rejected by four colleges to which he applied and whines about it. Dinged by UCLA with a 4-point GPA, totally predictable given acceptance rates. And just scroll down just a little bit, because this is a story out of the Daily Wire, which is Ben Shapiro's outfit, I guess. I don't know if he runs it, but it's a gun rights provocateur. David Hogg rejected by four colleges. They are celebrating the fact that he didn't get into the college that they wanted to. They had 44, they had like something like 6,000 retweets, 19,000 likes, but 44 responses. So that's a pretty bad ratio.
It's called
right?
a ratio, yeah. It's getting ratioed.
They got ratioed. In other words, less people liked it than responded, probably unfavorably. But here is Laura Ingraham, you know, putting this out there. And so David Hogg, and this is what's amazing about these students, they don't back down. And so David Hogg, and I guess others, but David Hogg seemed to take the lead and just basically said, like, all right, you wanna go down this road? And he starts tweeting out to some of the advertisers, like, do you really want to be associated with a woman like this? Now, you and I know, okay? Now, Laura Ingraham has since apologized, but you and I know that she is
the
worst
of the Holy Week.
This is a woman who has, she is now, I don't know, about my age, maybe a little bit younger. When she was at Dartmouth, she, as editor of her school newspaper, what she was doing right now, they're all, we all know that Ben Shapiro et al. Say these kids have no right to claim any type of like a voice of authority, because all they did was suffer from being victims here. This is a woman, when she was in charge of her school newspaper, sent in undercover reporters to LGBTQ meetings to out students for being gay and being leaders of this group. This is what she did with her time as a student. And there has been nothing in her career that has been inconsistent with that. So for people who are like, well, she apologized, we want to welcome people into the fold when they see their ways to the wrong. Bullshit. Bullshit. Her whole career should live or die based upon whether her advertisers want to support someone like that. And so David Hogg gets up and he goes, he tweets out, pick a number, 1 to 12. Contact the company next to that number. Top Laura Ingraham advertisers. Sleep Number, AT&T, Nutrish, Allstate, Esurance, Bayer, Rocket Mortgage, Liberty Mutual, Arby's, TripAdvisor, Nestle, Hulu, Wayfair. And like half of those at least have left her company already.
Yeah, TripAdvisor, Wayfair, Hulu, Nutrish. I mean, there's a whole list. I think there were 12 advertisers, and last I looked, 2/3 of them had dropped her.
Now listen, I want you to listen to her apology. It is so disgusting because, first of all, like I say, this is completely consistent with what she does every day on the radio, what she does on her TV show, what she's been doing for 25 years. But she writes, after the advertisers start to leave, any student should be proud of a 4.2 GPA. She inflated it a point, including David Hogg. On reflection, in the spirit of Holy Week, right? Let me introduce a little religion as a fig leaf for me to maintain my advertisers. I apologize for any upset or hurt my tweet caused him or any of the brave victims of Parkland. For the record, I believe my show was the first to feature David, and that's one of two. And then I can't find, she doesn't know how to thread her her tweets. Maybe there isn't a second one. But this is just like, I am, when I see things like this, I'm just happy to be around. Oh, wait, immediately after that horrific shooting, and even noted how poised he was given the tragedy. As always, he's welcome to return to the show anytime for productive discussion. Yeah, there she is. I mean, let me contemplate the idea of like making it a talking point that the guy didn't get into the college.
Well, the poised thing lines up with conspiracy mongering about David Hogg too, actually.
Right, that he's some
the
type of like
actor thing.
Yes, exactly.
I saw somebody say that, and that may be what. Certainly, I don't know if we're reading too much into it, but I wouldn't be surprised. Let's put it that way. I mean, I think nothing about that was genuine. You pointed out her history. Do you know? I bet you do know offhand, Sam, who she was co-editor of that paper with at Dartmouth.
Was it Dinesh D'Souza?
It certainly was.
It was
another wonderful, well-adjusted member of our commentariat these days, Dinesh D'Souza. Since the moment she gained any public notice, again, much like the others that are out there who are there for the same reason, not as thoughtful commentators with whom you may disagree, but people who are, you know, Dinesh is an example, Ann Coulter, whatever, who really just, they trade in viciousness, and that's what it is. You know, they're trying to divide people. And that's how they get their audience. They tell you who's bad and why they're bad and why you should be scared of them and why you should hate them and why would it be any different because somebody was just sitting in their school and somebody busted in and started shooting around them. I mean, it's absurd at this point. Even sort of the I don't know if you saw Steve King with his stuff today. He must have blamed. I mean, if we did this with anything else in our society besides guns, can you imagine if there was a car crash and like, you're like, yeah, but the sun wasn't out. Or, you know, like, you just sort of basically tried to make up reasons why. The guy was watching a bad TV show the hour before, you know? Like, Steve King is like, it's Ritalin, it's video games. It's like, he went on this long list. And it just, I mean, the ludicrousness to not sort of state, to try to hide the obvious of nature of what is going on here. You know what I mean? Just like Rick Santorum, oh, it must just be an act of nature, like an earthquake, so let's just learn CPR. So we can help a few people who didn't get shot too many times live afterwards. I can't think of anything else we can do that might prevent this. I mean, these people are ludicrous. They're on the losing end. The polls have turned even far further against them. So this is what they've got left. They can't debate the merits. All they can do is smear these kids. And these kids have been incredible. Again, I can't imagine seeing people that you were friends with and cared about, you know, killed in front of you and then having people mock you afterwards for coming out and speaking about how you don't want that to happen to other people and to have the quite frankly, the poise and just the presence of mind and the sort of the maturity. I mean, because it's not just him, right? It's Cameron Caskey and Emma Gonzalez and all these other, I mean, they're all incredible. At least all the ones I've heard speak so far. You know, it reminds me of, you know, some of the work I do on the Innocence Project. And every time I see these guys come out of prison who've been there unjustly for varying periods of time, they're always the most forgiving people. And it's incredible. And you think to yourself, how would you feel if the state just locked you away for 25 years and accused you of rape and took that from your life? And they come out and they're just, you know, so, I mean, there just are some, all I can write that out to is that there's just some incredible people out there.
Now, just like, I mean, you know, as we say this, you've got a former managing editor of Mediate, and sort of a this guy's at News Politics now, I guess, or something. I'm not sure what he's doing, but he's a sort of like a right wing. I don't know. He's sort of like a Breitbart light. This guy John Nicosia. And he's now complaining that David Hogg won't accept Laura Ingraham's apology until Fox News covers the things he wants them to cover. You wondered how the safe space generation would turn out. Here you go. Now, he's mocking a guy for needing a safe space, right? This is a guy who's just been through a mass shooting.
Right.
Who is...
Nice choice
who
of phrase. What an unbelievable fuckwit. I mean,
who
seriously.
Is online being attacked. Like, all we see are the top-level attacks, right? Like, can you imagine how many death threats this guy and his family are getting? Can you imagine the horrid, shit that's coming at him from the right wing? And this guy's now saying he needs a safe space. Like, they don't know how to deal with this. And they are just literally rolling out every trope they can. This is like the functional equivalent of saying, like, why are you getting so emotional? That they used to use 10 years ago. They cannot get past this. And of course he shouldn't accept her apology because it's full of crap. There is no apology to accept from Laura Ingraham. I'm sorry.
But even the way
he rejected
her apology.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm going to leverage it for a demand.
But he also did it with class. Like, he didn't, again, I can't be as mature. I mean, I'm so impressed by them. I mean, he could have reacted the way I would think a normal human being would react when they've gone through what he's gone through. And somebody who's a commentator on a show comes after them and personally, in a very personal way, purposely, tries to belittle them and attack them. And yet he didn't go after her personally. He didn't do it. His response was, okay, well, let's see what your advertisers think of this. And even after that, the fact that she only apologized after the advertisers started leaving speaks for itself. Even in how he's choosing to talk, and that's what they can't get. I'm not saying this is the same thing as sort of the civil rights era, but it reminds me in some way of these barbaric people attacking people just for wanting equality, whether it was in what they said or physically attacking them. And, that was the strategy behind what Martin Luther King said about nonviolence and about, that you loved your brother. I mean, you respond with love. It's what Gandhi said. And I'm not saying this is exactly the same thing, but there's an element about this, which is these vicious people come and attack them, and they respond with nothing but sort of optimism and positive responses. They don't jump into that same gutter. And again, like, I have a hard time dealing with that, because when these people come after me personally, I sometimes return in kind.
I think
that's why I'm so impressed.
I think what these students also understand intrinsically is this, like, this notion of, like, this is social media. Like, people can see you. And they know that, like, there's a certain, there's just more not people like Laura Ingraham than there are people like Laura Ingraham. And they know that they will win, and they trust in that that dynamic. All right, look, Cliff, we only got about 5 minutes left here, so let's get into this.
Yes,
you have a podcast,
I do,
and people should check it out.
We had
Unprecedented.
They should listen today. We had Malcolm Nance on.
Malcolm Nance was
on
today.
He offers some interesting ideas.
About apparently a week or two ago, and I heard quite a bit about it, you had on David Frum. Now, for people who don't know who David Frum is, he was a former speechwriter for George W. Bush. He's the one who came up with the axis of evil for his speechwriting in his speech. He sometime during the Obama administration, he sort of got kicked out of the conservative movement for being less than heterodox, or maybe being too heterodox. He is now a big never Trumper and fan of some in the resistance. And my question to you is, how could you platform this guy?
Well, I'll start with, I didn't have him on because I'm a fan, or I guess you're saying he's a fan of people in the resistance, or they're a fan
of
him?
No, some people, are fans of his. I mean,
I'm a fan of what he's doing right now. I had him on for two reasons, which I'll be very clear about. One is, quite honestly and quite sort of straightforward manner, this country was attacked by Vladimir Putin, who is somebody who is in his own country, I would think, everything that we would all hate. And I don't understand the sort of the sometimes people on elements, not everybody, but some people on the left who are just like, you're just trying to start a Cold War again. You're just, as if this guy, hasn't interfered in elections throughout the West and tried to undermine the NATO alliance and tried to do things that will lead to sort of his vision of a world where he's kind of this global leader of white supremacy at this point to increase. And here, I had Fromm on, and people were like, well, why didn't you hit him over the Iraq War? I had him on for two reasons. One is, a lot of us, including maybe us on this show, laughed. Donald Trump was never going to be elected president. Well, we were wrong. He is president, and he's undermining democratic norms constantly. So to me right now, if I find people who I have common cause with, whether they be on the left, center, or right, who are willing to speak out about what is going on and how those norms are being undermined, and in ways of somebody, okay, so I was a PhD student in history. You don't have to look to sort of Weimar Germany. Look to like Rwanda. I mean, we've got hate radio on the right. We've got them working with somebody who is now in the White House, who controls an immense amount of power, and who quite clearly, in some fashion, is working with Vladimir Putin. And well, I will work with anybody. It doesn't mean I whitewash what they do. I'll just finish this little thing, and then you can say what you want to say, and then I'll say my other piece. But I will work with anybody right now, be they wherever they are on the spectrum. And there's a few exceptions to that, probably not David Duke. But, I look at this as protecting American democracy. And I don't think that that's being alarmist at this point.
All right. Look, all right. I don't have the same perspective that you do on the on the Russia stuff in terms of like the nature of the threat from Russia. But let me stipulate that for the sake of argument, okay?
Can I ask you this? So Sam, they hacked into our infrastructure. They hacked into electoral databases of people's information.
I think that's like, very problematic.
You don't see that as a threat?
No. I think that's problematic, and I think we should deal with it. And I think frankly, there's a lot of threats to our voting processes. I mean, we know that Republicans just legislatively have disenfranchised hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, so there's no doubt.
And I've been out there on that fight, with Ari Berman, who we're going to interview.
No, I know. But I'm saying, I'll stipulate for the sake of argument that it is a threat, okay? Because I don't want to litigate that. Yep. But here's the problem with David Fromm, because this is the issue. The issue isn't whether or not there's something going on with Russia or that there's a threat or whatnot. Why won't you have David Duke on? You won't have David Duke on because he espouses some really bad ideas that you don't want in any way to have your credibility in any way rub off on him. And my argument about David Fromm is this. I could throw a stick or a rock or anything, really, even I think like a balled up tissue, and find somebody to come on to talk about how bad Donald Trump is, about and if I wanted to talk about how dangerous the Russian attacks are. But take, for instance, this. We got John Bolton, who you and I both think is a lunatic, okay, who you and I both know. I mean, this is a guy who has written in the past 16 months a call to bomb Iran and a call to bomb North Korea. Now, David Fromm, when he writes about Bolton, he can't bring himself to criticize Bolton because Bolton and he are very close in terms of their foreign policy perspectives. Bolton may not be want to transport the democracy at the butt at the end of a gun, but he still wants to be there with a gun in all the same places. And so from Frump's perspective, this is okay. I mean, he talks about Bolton as a guy who, you know, can get in there and maybe he doesn't praise him, but he certainly talks about this task of making sense of this chaos now falls to Bolton, a man of strong and certain opinions. A man of strong and certain opinions, right? Like, he's not going to go out there. He doesn't want to ruin his resistance cred, but not one adept at winning friends, convincing doubters, soothing opponents, or governing bureaucracy. The leaks of embarrassing information will gush. I mean, he doesn't even address in any way. This guy's, David Frum's not afraid of expressing his opinion. He doesn't, he does not critique the policy, which is going to, you want to talk about danger. I mean, this country has been, is still suffering from, and not to mention the hundreds of thousands who were killed and the 4 million who were displaced, suffering from the Iraq war. This is this guy's foreign policy. Right. And when you have him on, for people who don't know this about David Trump,
I would ask you why Bolton's even there, Sam. He's there because Donald Trump won. And because all sorts of people, a lot of people on the left, equated Hillary Clinton, that quote-unquote fucking hawk, in Glenn Greenwald.
Wait a second.
Donald Trump.
Bolton is there.
The same. And Jill
Bolton
Stein,
is there.
Said, okay. But that's why Bolton.
Yeah, but
Bolton,
I'm not saying have Jill Stein or Glenn Greenwald on. This is this is not part of the. John Bolton is there because Barack Obama wouldn't hold the Bush administration to account, because people like David Frum and Bill Kristol and everybody else who was a war hawk at that time suffered no accountability. No accountability.
Right. And I was right there with you.
Yes.
I was right there with you.
And
calling
this
for
guy
to suffer
continues.
Accountability at that
moment. He's a senior editor at The Atlantic. He was responsible for one of the gravest foreign policy disasters in the history of America. He is now a senior editor at the thing. They will not hold him to account for that. And so it's up to people like you and I who were there, who knew, to hold them to account by saying, I'm not going to give you, I'm not going to give you any credibility by allowing you on any platform I have control over.
Okay, and that's fair. I have to decide at some point, you know, what I consider to be the biggest threats right now. And to me, I guess, you know, you're stipulating the Russia thing, but that's where our huge disagreement is. And that's maybe at the heart of it.
No, I'm saying I stipulate that because, like,
when they're getting into the electric grid,
what does David Frum bring to the party?
Hampshire, they can shut it down, Sam. To me, that is a major threat.
Tell me you giving David Frum credibility, what is that going to do to stop this threat?
Because he's written a book, his book, Trumpocracy, a conservative book, and from that perspective, and is criticizing Donald Trump from that perspective. And I think
he should go on Eric Erickson's show.
I want to throw the damn guy out. I want to get the guy out of office. And the more people that say, I'm a conservative, because so many people in this country are brainwashed into being a member of whatever party they're a member of, or what, you know, if more people are willing to say,
show?
I'm sorry?
How many conservatives listen to your show? And
I have no idea.
I mean, this is the thing. I think what happens is there's a far more liberals who see that you're okaying David Frum, and now David Frum becomes a liberal hero. I mean, I sat on MSNBC, and they've done the same thing. They've platformed all these Never Trumpers who are former Republicans, and when John Bolton's name come up, they only have the people they have access to all basically say, well, you know, he's a fairly reasonable guy, because now this is how we all get amnesia. This is how we don't hold anybody to account. This is the functional equivalent of George W. Bush becoming now, completely rehabilitated in the public's eye.
That's with George W. Bush. Yeah. I mean, but George W. Bush was a policymaker, you know, was the one who theoretically was actually making these decisions. And again,
well, you don't think his advisors helped him get there?
Well, I mean, sure. I mean, David Frum wrote speeches and certainly came up with some nice phrases, but I guess I don't view that as on the same level. And it doesn't mean that I don't think that he was 100% wrong about that. But again, like, you know, if you view the threat through the lens I view it through, and through what a lot of people view it through, when people are literally breaking into your infrastructure of your country and have helped, clearly, Donald Trump at this point, if you think Donald Trump didn't win this election based upon factors other than getting the most votes, I don't even know where to begin with that. I mean, we know about the data that Cambridge Analytica got. We know about
I think the fact is that Comey was more responsible for Trump's win
than
Comey's getting the same rehabilitation treatment.
But I gotta say right now,
at least I can see Comey's value. I can see Comey's value in this fight a lot more than I can David Frum's.
Okay, well then let me ask you this question then, because you have lots of people on the show. Do you still have? Let's pull that name out. Do you still have Glenn Greenwald on this show?
It's been a long time since I've had Greenwald on the show, to be honest.
So I mean, is it okay that he speaks at the Cato Institute? Because when he has common cause with them, people that were run by the Kochs and want to cut all health care, is it okay when he gets on Twitter and vouches for Rand Paul, who believes that we should have a personhood law that should ban all abortion and believes that guns, there should be absolutely no laws around guns. Anybody should be able to get a machine gun when they want. Like, so it's okay on the left for Glenn to work with whoever he wants to work with when he has common cause with them, but it's not okay for me to do the same thing. Why is rehabilitating Rand Paul?
No, wait a second. First off, I don't think I've had Greenwald on since the election. And to the extent that he has done reporting that I think nobody else can or is doing, I could see value in having him on.
I saw value in Frum's insight in having him on and what he might know coming from a conservative perspective. What I know is last week, Tucker Carlson on his show on Fox talked about a demographic invasion of this country that really paralleled stuff that Hitler said in the 1930s. And guess who went on that show the same week and said great things about Tucker Carlson, the only one willing to talk about what's important right now, unlike
Cliff,
MSNBC.
Why aren't
the people that are asking you questions about me asking questions about him? Because they like
the politics,
they're okay.
I get people who do that all the time. Are you kidding? You don't think I get IMs that say, fuck is Glenn Greenwald doing?
Maybe.
And we talk about that too.
Okay.
But that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm
just making the point that people on the left find common cause sometimes with people that disagree with.
Guess who I won't have on this show? There are people who I don't have on this show and I critique on the left all the time because they do that bullshit. Of course.
Okay.
Of course. Do you know Jimmy Dore? I mean,
I may talk to David Frum. Jimmy Dore encouraged people not to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Hey,
the number of Jill Stein voters in Wisconsin was beyond that.
Criticizing Jimmy Dore is a cottage industry around these parts. All right. So believe me.
That's cool. I'd like to come on and do it more.
There's no time. Because we have so many other Jimmy Dore segments in the pipeline that we can't. No, I mean, we do that. I mean, that's we do that, of course. For the exact same.
In any case, I appreciate. Look, I'll say I appreciate this because I'm not so arrogant as to always think I'm right, and I had to ask myself questions. I do think I don't know if we have time, but there also was the fact that David was one of the people, and I do think this helps on the right. This is the second factor I told you earlier I was going to talk about. Who right after Newtown came out and called for the kind of gun control measures that exist in Canada went far beyond where even most Democrats are. And that was another reason I had him on after the school shooting, was to talk about that, because I think sometimes having people come from forming coalitions and have people coming from a conservative perspective on an issue you care deeply about can be helpful. And again, that's why I brought up the Glenn thing, because he thinks he agrees with Rand Paul on intelligence and spying. I agree with David on guns. You know, I appreciate the fact that, you know, that others see this differently. And it gives me things to think about. And again, I'm never so arrogant as to think that I always make the right decisions. So, you know, I will defend this to some degree. And to some degree, I'll reflect upon what you said.
Well,
I think,
listen,
know, it's good to have friends ask questions.
I appreciate you coming on. You knew I wanted to bring this up, and a lot of people would just say, like, I can't do it. It's the night before Passover, and it's Good Friday, and I got
to
I warned
you to bring it up because
I have to practice.
We all have moments where we need, you know, I told you I warned you to bring it up. We all have moments where we need to have these discussions and have accountability because, again, we try to make decisions in certain situations, and some of them are right and some of them are wrong. I still would argue there was some value to having David on, but I get where you come from.
I appreciate you talking about it. And I think that's very much to your credit, because a lot of people would just say, screw that. I don't want to do that.
Sam, for you, there's nothing but love.
Have a great Passover. I'm going on spring break. I really appreciate it, Cliffy. Always a pleasure.
Seriously.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Have a great week, buddy.
All right. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
All right, folks. Running a little bit behind, but that was, I thought that was good. And I felt like the blood coming into my body.
I think that was cathartic for a lot of us.
Recovered from my pneumonia.
Sam's more alive than he's been in like months.
I know. I've been like, all right, we got to call Benjamin. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, John Benjamin will join us. I have no idea what we're going to talk about. I am always at a loss for words when I speak to this guy. He's, all right, let's do this. God. Sometimes, folks, you know, you make a mistake that you end up regretting for a long time. And so, John Benjamin, welcome to the program.
That's a very expected introduction.
Folks, let me give you a proper... folks, of course, if you recognize
our next
guest... If you recognize our next guest, of course, it's from the... Majority Report voiceover artist and does other work. John, now you are, my understanding, if I look on your IMDb page, you're the voice...
IMDb.
IMDb.
I don't know what IMDb is.
IMDb.com page.
Right.
You are the voice
of... Have you done no research for this interview?
I've done a lot of research for this interview.
Okay.
More than you would even know about, frankly.
Well, go on.
Let me just tell you a couple of things that you've done. My understanding is that you were born on May 23 in 1966 in Worcester, Massachusetts. Is that correct, John?
Well, I mean, I didn't really do that.
All right.
I mean, I was part of it, but I didn't really do it.
Now, according to this, you are the voice of Bob Belcher on Bob's Burgers.
That's correct.
My understanding is that there's going to be a film. I haven't heard any of that information firsthand, but that's what I've
heard. You're on that show.
I have done a couple of those segments. Yeah. You are also the voice of Sterling Archer on Archer.
Yes.
Not familiar with that show.
I'm sorry. It's a good show.
Yeah, but it seems like you've been doing these things for a long time. What's next?
I don't know. You know, anything.
You have
anything
nothing.
Goes,
nothing
can happen.
Nothing lined up.
Oh, you want me to push my book?
Oh,
is that what you're getting at?
Oh no. You know, it's funny you say book.
I remember.
This is a very clumsy way of.
I remember
getting into it.
No, I wasn't gonna actually. I hadn't even thought about the book. It's funny though. Like,
but
I forget.
This is your oh, no, like I, hammerhead style.
I should tell you. I've forgotten about a lot of things I did. For instance, like that AMC show that I wrote called Failure
that didn't
is an
work
option.
Out.
Yeah, it didn't work out. It was called Failure is an Option.
I know.
And that's the way it goes. Anyways, tell us about your book. What's it called?
It's called Failure is an Option.
Wait, what? Are you serious? No, seriously. Yeah, what is it? What is your book really called?
No, it's called. You did a show called Failure is an Option, which is based on the. I think it was based on the expression, "Failure is an Option."
Well, it was actually. I actually took it from a Boston Globe article that was written about me.
Really? Well, it's funny that you bring that up because this my book actually did start as a biography of you.
And it is now mutated into what? What is this?
It got too dark and too depressing to keep going into the K-hole that is your life.
Did they say, John, we hired you to...
I decided to switch it back to my life to make it a little sunnier. Friendlier for people to be able to make it readable.
Make it readable. And so is this a series?
I mean, I have intimate knowledge of your life. I've been there along with you since you were a troubled teen. And, into the drug years and into the drug selling years.
Onto
your other failure. So it made total sense. And I did embrace the title of your AMC show, which I don't think was about you, right?
It was not directly about me. No,
but it touched on the failure of Air America, which you were involved in, and that did, and your life was failing at that time as well.
That's true.
So it did have a lot of it, and it had a lot of connections. So I did start the book about, and I'd gotten about 6 months into it, and I went into it about you, and I went into a deep depression. started just writing about me. And then I came out of that, and that sort of took me through it. So I do have you to thank for, the title and the inspiration to the title. And the book itself is kind of a catharsis about sort of coming through your life back into mine and making it whole.
Wow, that's very touching. I didn't realize how.
But I'm not like opposed to returning to it because I do have a ton of notes on you and just the mess that it's been for the last 35, 40 years.
35, 40 years. Well, I had a good.
Well, maybe more. 40, 45, 40.
I was going to say I had a good run of 10, according to you, early on. But now
I met you around then.
Right. That's true. That's true.
So I don't know what happened before, and I would have had to have gone and done more interviews and research to get that stuff. But, maybe I will return to it someday.
Well, that's, you started your career as an academic, and in some ways, maybe it sounds like you're returning to that.
There's a chapter in the book about my academia.
Oh, is that right?
Foray into academia. Yeah, yeah.
How honest are you about it? I mean, because you didn't do very well, if I remember correctly.
No, it's a really, really short chapter. It's like a page and a half.
And so tell me now, when does this, is this a memoir, or this sort of failed attempt to write a legitimate academic project bio on a fairly well-known political commentator? When did that part?
Saw you on MSNBC last night, by the way.
Yeah, no, I that's right. I was.
Right, you look gaunt. You look gaunt.
I look gaunt. Is that right?
You look like, what do you call it? Sallow?
Did I look sallow?
Yeah, a little bit.
Wow.
Jaundiced.
I look jaundiced.
Have you guys ever had a nice dynamic between each other?
No, wait. Let's not. No, I mean, he's expressing some concern. He's expressing some concern. Now, John, when does this book come out? When does this book come out? Is it available for pre-order right now?
It's available for pre-order on. I don't have the shit. I don't have the link.
You don't have the link.
It's Penguin Books. I don't have the where to go to get it.
Why would they go to Penguin? Like, but don't you want it like on Amazon? Don't you know that like?
I don't. I mean, I haven't looked yet.
Well, let's see. Let's.
I mean,
check
I know it's available for pre-order.
And do you know when it comes out?
Yes, May 1st.
May 1st. Okay, so we are just a month away.
We're a month away. This is the home stretch.
Failure is an option, you know. An attempted memoir. There's a picture of you.
Oh, you got it.
Yes, and you seem to be into some type of like sport coat. Now, why is that, John? Because you don't tend to wear sport coats.
I don't. It was like a photo shoot, and I brought my dad's sport coat. Like initially, we were gonna like base the book on like a sort of a Dale Carnegie style.
Oh yeah, there it is. I see that. Yeah, that's wow. And this is and then they also have like an ad.
No,
right
I
there.
Brought.
Well, scroll up for one second. Yeah. All right, so we're on the Penguin Random House. Pull up even a little further. Oh, okay. Because before the splash page is 20 books you've been meaning to read before you scroll down. That was basically said. But if you go to his Amazon page, because right now it's 697 in books. And John, I'm going to tell you something right now about this audience.
Is that really bad? No,
that's pretty good, actually. You're a month out. But I'll tell you what this audience is going to do. This audience is going to move that down to you're going to be, when this interview is over, I can tell you right now, you're at 697 in human entertainment books. You're going to be at 689, young man.
I like that.
We're going to move the needle on this thing.
He looks like an aggressive orthodontist. I like it.
Now,
like a what?
This is interesting to me. As I look at sponsored products related to this item on the Amazon page, there's the art of Rick and Morty. That's one of the things that's up there. That's interesting.
Oh, that's very popular.
Yeah.
Right.
And Go Team Venture, the art and making of Venture Brothers. That makes sense, right? Because that's a cartoon as well.
Animation.
And you're very well known for your animated voice. And then the next one is, so you want to talk about race. What's that about?
Is that Ta-Nehisi Coates?
No, that is Ijeoma Aloyu, who we actually are going to interview and is going to be on next week. But then it's Rethinking Incarceration, Advocates for Justice That Restores. What's going on, John? Is this a political book?
I don't know. I mean, there's definitely...
That's your algorithm, racial. Sam. That's your algorithm.
Sam's
developing that out.
Related.
I mean, it makes sense. There's a chapter on Eric Rosato. I know you know.
Did you do a chapter on Rosato?
I mean, I saw a little bit.
Did you contact him?
And race relations at Connecticut College. I tried to get. You gave me his email. I never wrote back, so I hope he doesn't sue me because I did talk about his sexual exploits.
Do you think there's going to be a lot of lawsuits? Because I feel like there might be.
I think there'll be like between 3 and 5 lawsuits.
And have you contemplated?
Maybe you. I wrote you're in the book, but I didn't name you because I didn't want to give you that.
Now, John, I hope you're aware that what you just said will be the basis of a lawsuit.
Maybe. I mean, come get me.
I'll come get you. I got no problem with that at all. In fact, I will take, if there's any tort lawyers out there that I could find, let's say.
I would love to go.
In Vegas when I go to the tort lawyer conference next week, maybe I'll be able to find an attorney who will represent me for this.
You go to a lot of those every year.
Well, I need a lot of lawyers to deal with all the libel.
Another failure in your life to a degree. When you dropped out of law school, you could have kept going. Could have been a tort lawyer, but you dropped out after a year. It was a failure.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And in the book, I think you'll make these connections. So I would hope, in a way, I think a book like this will really help you.
Do you guys ever contemplate like which one of you is going to die first and give like the insult eulogy?
Die first in what?
And do like the roast eulogy.
It's true.
Yeah.
That's probably the thing that's going to keep me alive for a long time.
Right? Like Sam's like, I'm going to start eating my carrots.
Are we like,
that's right. I'm going to start. I've started taking Restrovol or whatever it is.
I pictured it more sharing a hospital room together, right? Back
that's
and forth.
That's a great. Insulting, that's a good show.
Insulting each other and whoever fought the final insult. Just to get the last one out before the.
Because you're a failure.
Now, John, let's talk for a moment.
You used to beat me up in.
Wait, which one beat who up?
I mean, seriously?
Sam used to beat me up in.
Come on.
Size matters.
Sam trying to decuckify right there.
Can I just say, I was very confused when I first started working here as to whether you, John, or Michael did the intro to the show.
Michael
has a good voice. Could have done it.
Yeah, we both have good voices.
That was done a long time ago, right? Was that done for the Air America show?
Yes, that was done probably 14 years. ago, but we've gotten a lot of use out of that.
And I know, I never
checks,
got paid for
checks
that.
In the mail,
including a lot of use from
like
scandals that nobody remembers
bucks
either.
At one point, I do feel like we paid you like probably in 2009. I do think.
No, you did not. Of course, you did not.
Yeah, I think so. I think we did.
Did you say, "Hey, I'll pay you. Meet
you
me in this
me
alleyway
in 2009."
I think it's possible. You get $200,
and then you beat him up.
That's when $200 meant something. Now, John, let me ask you this. Your last project, your last side project, you know, from, you obviously...
Outside of the animation world.
Outside of the animation world, although you were also in Wet Hot American Summer, Family Guy. My understanding is that you do a little voice work in Destiny 2. You were, of course, Brian on Difficult People, if I remember correctly. I liked your work as Officer Glimmer on The People of Earth and Mitch on Wet Hot American Summer. But and I will say this, your work as Fred on that animated series, not as exciting to me. All Hail King Julian, I thought, was sort of a not so great.
I haven't seen it, but your guys, maybe your kid watches it.
No.
No. Okay.
John. But your last side project outside of of show business was a musical project. That was the last time we had you on this program. I've been told.
Is that true? I was on for that for the jazz album.
You were on for the jazz album. How did that do? How did that do?
It sold out.
I
don't know how many they pressed, but it did sell out. It's a collector's item now.
You can't get it. They stopped public. In other words, they stopped making them.
Well, no, they do a limited pressing.
It wasn't worth their while to make more, is what you're saying.
Well, I think we've, yes.
Now, are you going to come back with sequel to that?
I was hoping to make a follow-up.
Can we play just a little bit of John Benjamin's jazz album? Do you have
one of those? Then I'll tell you, after you play it, I'll tell you last night I did get a letter from a professor at St. Louis, University of St. Louis, or St. Louis Community College, a college that featured it as a in their course.
Let's play a little bit. This is from John Benjamin's jazz album. It's entitled, Well, I Should Have. The album, and you are playing piano on this. Wait, this is just the video. Yeah. The video. This is put out.
This is just another example of John sort of disrespecting the forum directly to a legendary man's in the business's face.
Jazz Daredevil. John Benjamin, Jazz Daredevil.
I'm just kidding.
Let's hear it. This is I Can't Play Piano, Part 1. This is John Benjamin on the piano. I have to say,
holds up. It holds up. It holds up.
Those guys playing the bass and the drums and saxophone, really great.
Yep.
And
really wait, was there also, is this the album that also has the kind of your rap where you're requesting a certain, no, that's another.
Yes, it is.
Where you're requesting a certain type of sex act and from a woman that you're dating. And I thought it was really funny at the time. And I texted it to this, to a girl I was dating, and I just got this response. And just the response was, why did you send this to me? What is this? Oh my God. Disgusting.
That's definitely not a good way to impress your new girlfriend.
No, that was fine.
That was a gift for the mother of my child. That was the first thing I made for her.
That was so you recorded that like 20
know the
20
feeling.
Years ago.
I know the feeling.
20 years ago. Bumsteer.
Bumsteer.
Yes, I gave it. I think I made it for her birthday. Like it was really old. I did it with Lauren Bouchard. Sam, who you know.
Yes.
He's not using it as much anymore.
No, he's not, actually. What's this? He's doing a whole nother show, and he's not using you. Are you in that show?
Well, I don't know. I just read about it.
Oh, well, I guess. So we're in the same boat. Interesting. How?
But
apparently your big success as a voice actor does not accrue in the way that you thought it did. Now, John, are you coming out with a sequel album?
I don't know. I do want to make another one. The initial plan was to learn how to play, and I took a lesson. And there's a potential that I will learn how to play piano and come out with my second jazz album. But I think that would, the idea was to try and learn quickly. I have that kind of time.
Right.
But I think it would still take about 10 years. So there's an option that would happen.
So you're contemplating releasing another album in 10 years.
Well, I took a lesson and it went really poorly. And then I immediately did the math thinking that it's going to take at least 10 years to be able to produce my second album if I learned how to play. But I thought that would complete my jazz career, like a full circle, not knowing how to play to knowing how to play.
Now, John, let me turn to something else. Now, I have noticed that over the past couple of years on Twitter, I've been following you. You've become much more politically engaged. Like, you used to use Twitter just to sort of like write rude things. And now.
What do you mean rude?
Like rude things. Like rude.
Well, I still do that.
Yeah, but it used to be exclusively rude things, I feel like. You used to like write something really rude, and now you're becoming, you're much more like political. What has changed with these times?
I was reluctant to Twitter. I came to Twitter for promoting my Comedy Central show back in 2011.
And that was
Twitter was like
John Benjamin has a van. Is that correct? John Benjamin has a van.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So after that failure, like after that fell apart very quickly,
super quick.
I was left with the Twitter account. I inherited the Twitter account that they created for me. I probably would not have gotten involved with Twitter. I don't do any other social media forum.
You don't do any other. Is that it? This is it. Twitter is it for you?
I'm not on any other social media whatsoever. I just exclusively Twitter. Not to promote Twitter, but that's how it started.
Okay.
And that was given to me by the show, as in it was used for promotion, which is, it's not really that. I don't have a show anymore.
Oh, the show is not on air anymore?
No, it wrapped up after one season.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm sorry to hear
that. Oh, my God. Wow. I've never seen... It looks like Sam just de-aged.
Yeah.
Like 10 years right there.
I had no idea. I thought that show was ongoing. Okay. All right. Well,
I am so sorry to hear that.
I used it strictly for promotion, and then, I guess, I got more involved in using it to take in the news.
I like...
So I spin it back. And it is, probably my primary source of taking in news now.
I like how you tweeted out when Trump couldn't get a lawyer, time to call 800-888-8888.
Yes, I guess Selena and Barnes, who apparently broke up. There's apparently, right, they broke up.
Did they really? I had no idea about that either.
Who was the other guy? Was it Frank E. Salamone? Remember those ads?
Selena and Barnes had the jingle, the really good jingle. Right.
Salamone's ads would be, you would be inside an insurance company, and they would be like about to shred your claim, and then someone would run in, and they'd be like, no. That person's handled by Frankie Salamone.
I think it was
and
Mark.
And they would pull it out of the shredder.
This is tickling some like deep embedded thing in my brain. I think it was Marky Salamone.
Wait, it was Marky versus...
I have not thought about this since childhood, probably.
Oh, wow. You're thinking of the Ramones.
Him and Miss Cleo.
Can I ask a question, guys?
Yeah. No. Shoot. I mean, if that's okay.
I think that's fine. I mean, I just he's sensitive, so.
Oh, okay.
No, keep it.
This is a fairly innocuous question, maybe. When you guys lived together, I've heard some stories about it. Who was the grosser one? Would you say?
It's not even close.
Oh, me for sure.
Right, of course.
Me, Sam got like I think the best right the. Story that is that Sam decided to like protest my inability to clean anything by also stopping to clean. So he tried to like.
This is what happens with an arms race, folks.
Direct action gets the goods.
Yeah. John would not wash a single dish. And so I decided to stop also to washing a single dish. And then like a month later, we had to throw out all the dishes because it was just too disgusting.
As a slob myself, I will say that will never, ever work on a gross person. Ever.
No.
It's a pyrrhic victory.
Right. You double down. Of course. I doubled down. It was better.
I feel like I learned to deal with my children better through living with you.
You throw out your dishes a lot.
We don't even use dishes at my house now. They're just all paper.
But then when John Ennis came in, he was also kind of gross as well in different ways.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So I'm not going to tell that story. I don't have enough insurance to tell that story. Let's play this clip of John.
Funny you bring up insurance.
Yes, thank you.
I don't know if you want to get into that, but it's funny you bring it up.
Oh, no, that's all right. All right, so let's play this clip. I want to play this clip of Bill O'Reilly. I don't know if you were aware of this, John. I thought maybe you would enjoy this clip.
Okay.
Bill O'Reilly is back. He has a new set. It's a professional-looking set. It's the No Spin News at BillO'Reilly.com.
Oh, so he's producing his own show now.
Yep, and... We get a good sense of where he's going to go with this show. Here's Bill O'Reilly.
For a long time, skin color really wasn't much of an issue. 80s and 90s, you didn't hear a lot. Yeah, you always had your
Pause Farrakhan. It. Now, John, I know that you, back when you were at Northwestern, you were a history, you got your master's in history. You focused on the Holocaust and what was going on in Europe. Mm-hmm. But as someone who had at least some basis in history, was skin color not an issue for a long time in this country? Was there skin color not like, so much an issue?
I think like during the, like, probably like around 1980 through, I think, around 2000, it was not.
2008, right?
Oh, you mean like when Obama was elected?
Right, yeah. It was like not an issue.
The 80s and the 90s were pretty much, historically speaking, although like you said, my concentration was a lot earlier in Germany. But I think like 80s and 90s U.S. history was kind of like the no issues couple of decades.
Right.
German O'Reilly, yeah, like Jews weren't a big deal in the 30s. Right. And then check out the list.
Judaism was pretty good in the 20s.
Judaism was fine in the 20s. Now they talk about it all the time.
Nobody complained about it.
Nobody. Now listen to the list of people, though. There were some people who brought
people
stuff
who
up in the 80s and 90s. And
who did talk about race.
Interesting commonality in this list.
Yeah, I don't remember any. Personally, I don't remember any really skin color issues going on in the 80s and 90s in this country. So O'Reilly might have a point.
Right, here it is.
Much of an issue, 80s and 90s, you didn't hear a lot. Yeah, you always had your Farrakhans and your Sharptons. Always had those people, but
you always had your
Jackson,
black.
They were race hustlers. They were, it was a money thing, an industry thing. But now, whiteness has become the issue.
How awesome is
whiteness, right? So if you're a white American, you are part of a cabal that either consciously or unconsciously keeps minorities down. Therefore, that has to end, and whiteness has to be put aside. That's what the border is all about. The open border people, and believe me, this is behind the movement in California and in the Democratic precincts. Let everybody in. Everybody in. All right? That would diminish whiteness because minorities then would take over as they have in many parts of California. That's what that's all about.
Mm-hmm.
Getting whiteness out of power, particularly white men. So the Me Too movement, very closely aligned with the progressive left.
Particularly me.
Very, very closely aligned. Get those white guys. Get them.
Yeah, get the white guys.
Now, Michigan State professor Riyad Shahanigan and a graduate student there named Annabelle Estera put forth that...
That's the best!
Let me just quote it.
That's
the
really
professors
good.
Cite a review of
website.
All right,
website. Pause it 1 second. Here we go. Now they're going to do... he's going to dig in on this. Estera!
No, he goes, no, he's like Rebecca Estera! Calabundo!
Estera! All right, so let's hear the report.
Out of respect. Here's the
report.
I put forth that... Let me just quote it. The professors cite a review of websites where they discovered that whiteness is not only evident in stock photos, pictures, all right,
pictures?
But that whiteness was entangled with patriarchy, homonormativity, that is a word used to describe instances of privilege.
Is he trying to say heteronormativity?
Outside of the LGBT community. All right, so you're seeing this almost every day. I tell you about this almost every day.
Every day.
That the white people, whether they know it or not, are pressing and creating macro aggressions for the minority community.
Pause. Can you imagine the idea that white people would create a macro aggression for the minorities? Where's these ideas ever come from?
He's got it all right so far. I don't see what the problem
is. You know what I love is I like in the Blacklist where he's like, you could tell he's really out of it. And I think what he was trying to do for a second there, because when he was on Fox, he was much tighter. He would be like, Sharpton,
right,
Farrakhan, David Duke.
Well, they
and
had it written for
he's
him.
He's looking for the white guy to mention. He's just like, Sharpton, Farrakhan, Jesse Jackson.
Right.
Another black guy.
Another black guy. Well, he doesn't have to do that anymore. He doesn't
have to. Well, is this a function of like him doing it like in his basement? Like he's bunkered down? And,
I don't know. This is actually, the set is actually looks like, you know, fairly legit. I bet it's pretty small, but I think it's also a function of him saying like, I'm looser now, I'm looser. And really the key is what I've lost. I may have lost a step in my broadcasting ability, but I'm making it up in my full-on white racism. Here we go.
Racism, yeah.
Exactly.
So therefore, the white people have to be swept out of power. You gotta get them out. And let the LGBTs and the minorities.
The LGBTs.
And all they have
Pause
to.
Pause it. Just for folks at home, I should say, it is possible to be white and be LGBT.
Not in LGBTs.
Not like, LGBTs.
That's a whole other thing. The LGBT, that's my favorite roller derby squad.
the LGBTs and the minorities and all they have to run.
He's practically rapping.
That's what this is all about.
There you go. That's what it's all about. So, John, I'll let you have the last word. What do you say?
I'm gonna tune in to Bill O'Reilly for sure.
What did he say that was wrong, Samantha?
There you go.
Can't
homo not a veris.
Homo not a veris. You can't fight him on facts, so you do liberal slime. Couple of voice actors that hate themselves and love trannies attack Papa Bill. Fuck you both.
Thanks, guys.
John Benjamin, the book is out now. Well, I mean, it's if available for pre-order. It is, of course, called Failure is an Option, sort of a memoir. People can look for it under John Benjamin. I want to push that thing up the charts.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll check it next week or I'll check it tomorrow.
Let's check it right now. Let's see if we've moved the. I don't know if it moves that quickly.
Move the needle, right? They probably refresh it. You know,
it probably takes a little time.
Dinner time.
Still at 697. Still at 697. But we're gonna move this baby down to the 680s. By we're done.
Hey, I'll come on next Friday and see where we're at. All even just for a short check in.
All right, we'll check it. I mean, I'll be on vacation.
Oh, all right. Well.
All right, John. Okay. Happy Passover. I guess I'll probably see you in a couple hours.
Yeah, see you tonight.
All right, bye-bye. All right, folks. That is John Benjamin of John Benjamin Had a Van, and then it went away. All sorts of other shows. You may have heard him from Who's the Caboose or Beat Cops back in the day.
He's great in that. I have watched it now.
You've watched Who's the Caboose?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that should have been the first thing you asked him about. That would have been that should have been the thing. Like if you would only referred to Who's the Caboose during that interview, I think that would have been best for him.
Your banter was just so mesmerizing and adorable.
In Who's the Caboose? Back when?
Well, just now, but sure, right. Then too. Why not?
All right. Well, there you go. Now, folks.
Yeah, Who's the Caboose? And he set things on fire.
In a way, it did set things on fire. Just just not the things you would want to be lit on fire and burnt to shards.
Are we sure we have a new Jimmy Reefer kick, by the way? We have legalization, but I think we played that last week.
Wait a second. Didn't he? I saw a new email from him. Do we?
The one I saw was just a response to legalization. Like it was. I thought that was the most recent one. Yeah, see?
No,
came
he,
in at
he had
10,
a new one.
10:27. Though. Yeah, it's a new email, but it's on the same thread.
Oh, yeah, it's a new email. Is
yeah,
it not the
that's
same
what
thing?
I forwarded. I don't know.
It's a new one. Yeah, try it. Well, wait, it's legalization. It's the same one that he's played a couple weeks ago.
Maybe we didn't play it last Friday. Did we play it last Friday? I don't remember.
I mean, I at least downloaded it. We can play it.
Okay, let's do it.
Two politicians telling lies, don't do it, don't do it. Inject your soul with liberty, it's free, it's free. To the police handing out fines, don't do it, don't do it. Prohibition isn't free, I said prohibition isn't free. Legalization, legalization, legalization is free. Legalization, legalization, legalization is free. Alaska, California, Colorado, Maine, Massachusetts, Nevada, Oregon, Vermont, Washington State, and D.C. If you're in pain with sleepless nights, don't put those pills into your head. Use weed instead. To all the kids with heroin eyes, don't do it. Don't you do it, cause it's not what it seems. Not what it seems. But legalization, legalization, legalization is free.
Legalization, legalization, legalization is free. You grow it, you sell it, you tax it, you smoke it, you vape it, you dab it, you tax it, you smoke it, you smoke it.
Well, I don't have my thing, but I would, yes, bravo, bravo. It's a great message. And is that same Cranberries again? Is he?
Yes.
He's really on a Cranberries jag, feels like.
She's his muse now.
Yeah. Interesting. But good message, Jimmy. And I'm going to play that for my kids.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So that they don't mess with the bad stuff.
That's what, like, Trump, that grant money for. We need those ads.
That's
non-smoking
true.
Ads.
I feel like he could probably maybe swing something like that. Folks, a reminder, this program relies on your membership to continue. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. And as always, if you cannot afford a membership, but you want to listen to the fun half, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. A couple people have reached out past couple of days. Some we've been able to respond to. Some we will get to. I promise you, we will not turn anyone away for financial reasons. Also, don't forget, check out TMBS from this week.
And tonight, because we're on vacation, so we're doing a special episode tonight, 6 p.m.
Wait, so you're running it tonight? You're not
doing it live. Week? We're doing it live tonight because we're not going to be in studio for a live one next week.
Do it live.
Doing it live. So Assemblyman Lee Carter's the guest tonight.
Lee Carter from Virginia.
From Virginia, 6 p.m. starting line.
Very impressive.
So live show tonight for TMBS because next week we are all on vacation. But I will tell you this right now. On Monday, on Tuesday, on Thursday, on Friday, all new interviews. Really interesting stuff. I can tell you because I've already done the interviews. They're good. Check them out. You will love them. For members, you will get a special Matt's pick from the vault. On Wednesday, we will play two interviews I did for Ring of Fire Radio, which I don't think many of you have heard. One about SESTA and one about folks like the alt-light using or alt-right using pseudoscience to justify their racism.
Taking me out of context.
Well, I don't know who you're referring to.
Context. And it is out of.
So all new material for you next week and some deep archive stuff for members. Make sure you check that out. In the meantime, I imagine, Jamie, you'll continue to post at your Patreon page, right?
Always be posting. I also just dropped an op-ed in The Guardian today.
Really?
Yeah.
Throw it on the blog post.
Link to it.
That's a good idea.
We will link to that, of course, in the show notes of today's program. But you can check out Jamie's Patreon page. It is a pay as you want type of situation over there. So you can check out her stuff, check out her writing. And also Just Coffee. Oh, shoot. All right. You're going to remind me of this when we record on Monday and Tuesday's show, the pre-tape. Starting next week, Just Coffee has their 30% off situation for April. And do I even have the code? Son of a gun. Well, go over there. It is the 30% off. We'll push it when we get back, too. And I'll try and remember next week. I'll try and in next week's shows. But it's 30% off. This is the time for you, if you've ever heard me say justcoffee.com and you've looked at the coffee and said, I wonder, do I want the Ethiopian coffee? Do I want the Colombian, the Guatemalan, or do I want a dark roast or a light roast? Or do I want the cold brew or whatever it is, the Majority Report blend or, God forbid, the WTF blend? You go and you look at these things and you don't, do I want to get this? I don't know. It's the prices are comparable with the coffee I buy in the bag down at the store at the Starbucks or wherever it is I buy it. But this is all fair trade. And I want to support the show.
Yeah, why would you buy Starbucks coffee?
That's
just so basic.
People get into the coffee they like, and that's the coffee they like. Now is the time to try it. It's 30% off in the month of April. So just get ready. I'll give you the codes next week, and we'll post it on the blog somewhere. We're going to do that. Maybe Brendan, maybe collect all the sponsors and put it on. He looks a little nervous about that. All right.
Goodbye.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. You. Head into the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number, ladies and gentlemen. And the IM, we will be, of course, taking phone calls and IMs. See you alive in a week if this is where you say goodbye to us.
No, not a week. Week Monday.
Well, a week from Monday.
Gotcha.
No, you know what I mean. All right, bye.
You got to be precise.
Ladies and gentlemen, apparently Jeb Bush still alive, and he's out there still doing his Jeb Bush thing. Here he is at Yale University. I imagine this is his alma mater, right? I mean, didn't all the Bush kids go to Yale after Dad and Grandpa went to Yale?
Yeah, what's the secret society they were all a member of?
Skull and Bones.
Jeb went to the University of Texas.
Oh, he did?
Yep. God, what a...
Damn right.
Yeah.
I was a real deal. Yeah. I was a real deal.
Went to State University.
Total real deal.
Total realness.
after Big Brother got thrown out of... Jeb is the younger, right?
Mm-hmm.
After Big Brother got thrown out of Yale, they said, let's not try this again. Here's Jeb Bush at Yale talking about why his loss. Remember, he said during the campaign, like, I could be doing a lot of other things. People will only remember when Donald Trump said this. But I got news for you. This is a news flash. They're all horrible. They're all horrible. Some are more horrible than others, but they're all horrible. Here he is talking about, now remember, I just want to remind everybody, his son came out and endorsed Donald Trump. So.
The chance to run, I met so many people. You get a sense of the struggles and the aspirations of a whole lot of people when you get a chance to run the way that I was privileged to do. It didn't work out for me, but you don't have to worry about me a bit. It's
not.
I have a huge safety net.
Pause it, bro. It's like, honestly, what's going on in this guy's head that he thinks everybody's worried about him?
There was probably a lot of emails from like old associates being like, "Hey, old buddy, you were totally emasculated for a solid year on national television. Are you okay?" And then your son endorsed the same guy who emasculated you every single day. How you holding up? And he just thinks that that's everybody.
I think it's just called ruling class entitlement, no?
Yes. I actually think that to the extent that he got any emails like that, it wasn't just that. It was like, wow, man. Didn't think that the Bush name could be actually brought down any worse than your brother did. But have you scorched the earth for George
unfair.
P?
That's unfair.
Okay, well, let's go back just a little bit. So just in case you were worried about Jeb Bush.
Work out for me, but you don't have to worry about me a bit. It's I have a huge safety net. The day I lost in South Carolina, I went home.
Now, pause it for 1 second. I should also tell you, it's sort of disgusting him talking about his huge safety net.
Must be nice.
Yeah.
He has trust fund. His whole purpose in politics was to destroy everybody else's meager safety net.
It's just like, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just sort of, it is both my awareness that I have every possible privilege that one could even associate with mortal human beings. And I just want you to know, I ran on a platform that involved cutting that for everybody else.
What a scumbag.
The day I lost in South Carolina, I went home, and I went home to my wife of 43 years. I went home to children that actually love me. I have four perfect grandchildren.
Pause it. Hold down for 1 second. So wow. There he is. He got the dig in there on Donald Trump, of course, saying. But here, roll it back.
I like it.
What he won't say is also, I also had millions and millions and millions of dollars that I never even had to contemplate not having because I was born into it.
And my son endorsed Donald Trump. Let's just say that again. Real love.
My wife of 43 years went home to children that actually love me. I have four perfect grandchildren. That wasn't supposed to be a joke, just for the record.
I guess it's possible he's that bad at jokes that he made one by accident.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you have a fulfilling and rewarding sexual relationship with one of your children, Jeb? Oh, I forgot. You don't have a hot dog.
I wonder who he's talking about, too. Like, I mean, if he didn't mean that as a joke, I wonder if he's talking about, like, his relationship with his parents. Right, which is just as possible as it could be for Donald Trump.
Jeb is right. Mama don't love him.
I was trying to be self-deprecating, and it turned out I slammed Trump better than I ever have when I was trying to on purpose.
Yeah, so, I would try to work myself up into a lather, and I failed every single time.
Is that my time? Is that my time? Is that, please clap.
Did that just happen? I was making indirect reference to the fact that my father was cold, distant, and removed, and my mother had a weird, overbearing, sexualized relationship with me. And then in contrast to my children, I'm less abusive. But that was read as an insult on Donald Trump. Oh, okay.
Guess what? Popular sentiment changes.
Man, I miss him. I got to say, I used to have fun once upon a time at Death of Taxes doing voiceovers. Fun fact. Reading things that Jeb Bush said in the voice of a millennial with vocal fry.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
I hear there's rumor.
We got to get a hold of
them. Not much of a stretch for me.
Folks, Donald Trump is in Ohio, and it's amazing in some respects how, you know, this is one of the things that the conservative mind needs is a sense of that we're under assault. And look, there is a reason why you say when infrastructure is deteriorating in a first world country, you could say, like, our infrastructure has been completely ignored. That we have allowed what we have accomplished as a nation to be destroyed through neglect, through mismanaged priorities. The thing is this, is that when you say we're like a third world country, you're saying like we never had the resources or the means in which to develop, because that's what a third world country is. You might also say, like, oh, we had all our resources exploited by other countries, and so our development has been in some ways sclerotic. The other reason why you might say that is because you want to make your audience feel like we are being infected by something from the third world.
It's a plan for building a stronger America. For most of our history, American infrastructure was the envy of the world. True. Go back 30, 40, 50 years, they would look at us like, now we are like, in many cases, a third world country. It's an embarrassment. And we're the ones that had the imagination and the drive to get it done. But we've got that again. Other nations marveled as we connected our shores with transcontinental railroads and brought power to our cities that lit up the sky like no other place on earth and built mile after mile of internet capabilities and interstate highways to carry American products all across the country and around the globe. Nobody did it like us. We dug out the Panama Canal. Think of that. Thousands of lives were lost to the mosquito. To the mosquito. Malaria. We dug out the Panama Canal. We transformed our skylines with towering works of concrete and steel and laid the foundation for the modern economy.
It's so funny to listen to read. But the third world country, I mean, look, He's not telling the story of how our infrastructure got depleted.
Or built in the first place.
Or built. He's not telling the story of like, but members of my class and my party, to a large extent, also have basically used tax cuts and other mechanisms to basically avoid putting money in there.
FDR, great guy, disagreed with him on a lot of stuff, but great guy, cut a deal with Lucky Luciano, brought in a bunch of Chinese, and we dug ditches, and now there's the Panama Canal. What part aren't we getting? When we stopped subcontracting to the five families, everything fell apart. Everything fell apart. Fell apart.
Folks,
malaria.
Folks, I'm sure you remember the suicide pact, right? The suicide pact was it Mnuchin and
Mnuchin, Tillerson, and Mattis?
Definitely Mattis. A guy I'd make a suicide pact with. Looks totally trustworthy.
Well, Mattis has watched Tillerson go and McMaster go. And was it?
Like Cohen?
Oh, Cohen. Okay. Cohen, Mattis, and Tillerson. Well, Cohen's gone. Tillerson's gone. Mattis is still there. So much for that suicide pact. And here he is greeting John Bolton, a man who never served a day in his life, because why would he go fight and die in rice paddies for a war that was already over, according to him? Not that he ever did not find a war that he didn't like. He's just now understands that when you have the ability to bomb from far away, just do that. And here is James Mattis greeting the incoming national security advisor and having this to say, a little bit of a light jesting moment.
Best of all.
Mr. Secretary, it's so good to see you.
Thank you for inviting me over. Thanks for coming, and it's good to finally meet you. Since I've heard that you're absolutely a devil incarnate. I wanted to meet you.
There he goes. I've heard you're actually the devil incarnate, and I wanted to meet you. And that, of course, is one of those things where they call kidding on the square.
A little unkind to the devil, I must say.
Yeah, I mean, the devil doesn't necessarily communicate where he wants to bomb first, does he?
I like how Mattis is like, apparently you're the new nutcase that I, as a war criminal, actually have to restrain. That's the world we're living in. You know, I remember that there was a time when I was on the ground in Iraq being like, why can't we carpet bomb and flood Fallujah? And I don't give a shit how many civilians die. But in today's world, I have to be Gandhi. Anyways, nice to meet you, walrus guy.
Unbelievable. All right, let's go.
I think we got to look at that Sheldon Adelson angle on the Bolton appointment, if there's any strategy behind it. Open up the coffers for the midterms.
Maybe. Calling from an 817 area code. Who's this? 817. Because they were contemplating Bolton a long time ago. It's just a mustache.
Sure. Well, I bet Adelson's been pushing for it for a long time, too.
817 area code.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. It's going great. What's on your mind?
My name is Matthew. I'm in North Dakota, originally from Texas. I am calling because, well, I wanted to talk about a couple things, hopefully quickly. So are you familiar with the Atheist Experience show at all?
I am not.
It's on YouTube.
Okay.
It's been around for a little while. I don't know if it's been around as long as y'all show, but it's a call-in show, much like y'all's. I called in there a couple years ago whenever the Sam Harris Noam Chomsky thing first happened, the email exchange, and I asked them the question about
the email exchange that Chomsky specifically said, I'd rather you not release, and then Sam Harris went on to release so that he could show that he was actually having a conversation with Noam Chomsky. But go ahead.
Yes, and I'm of the opinion that Sam Harris misrepresented Noam Chomsky quite a bit, saying that he did not, you know, talk about states' intentions when they are attacking other countries, when in fact Noam Chomsky in the email exchange like explicitly stated ways in which you could describe their intentions and find evidence of their intentions, which was ignored. But I asked the question about political and religious violence, basically, like, how do you differentiate? How does Sam Harris or any one of those types of people differentiate political and religious violence? Like, when is it the fault of the state that is attacking another country, and when is it the fault of an ideology that is perpetrating violence? And I wanted to see if you had any opinion or answer as to that question.
How do you disaggregate the state from a religious ideology in terms of the violence they commit?
Right, like I know they often go hand in hand, which was the answer that I got from the Atheist Experience. If anybody's interested in that show, but
well, I mean they don't.
So, yeah, essentially.
I mean they don't. I mean I think what's going on with Saudi Arabia right now is a perfect example of this. I mean, and I would say, I don't think there was anything. I mean, what was the Muslim Brotherhood,
we're running Egypt. You're talking about how the Saudis helped dislodge the Muslim Brotherhood to get a military secular dictatorship back in Egypt.
No, I'm talking about how, like, right now, mm-hmm. what's going on with the Saudi Arabians in terms of you're liberalizing some of their interpretation of Islamic law when it comes to women, but they're not. It's actually the violence that state is going to, has not diminished domestically in any significant way.
Not internationally.
They're ramping it up
either.
Internationally.
Yeah, guys, the problem with people in this scene too often is that they just don't understand politics.
Attention to it.
Yeah, and then religion is usually like a afterthought or something that can be used to justify a pre-existing policy intention.
I mean, I'm into historical materialism, right? I think that underlying material conditions and the politics usually take precedence over any kind of social or cultural force. That said, religion has been used in extremely powerful and damaging ways by people in power for centuries.
Well, the issue isn't whether or not religion's used.
Right,
the issue is whether or not religion is the catalyst and the primary driver of these things, and it's far more often used as an excuse.
It's a second order thing, and there's a whole cottage industry of people who, ironically, they don't have a materialist or empirical view. They have a completely ideational view. They literally think that people's belief systems and ideologies precede their material conditions and actually set policy and set conditions. And that's not how the world works.
I have no doubt that there was a time where religion drove certain things. You know, like I would imagine a certain amount of, I mean, I don't, and I have no doubt that on some level it plays in, like, you know, were Europeans imperialist, you know, specifically because of their Christian beliefs? Not necessarily. I think it was more of a cover. I think it was like, I want to make money.
That's the story you have to tell if you're going to go enslave and murder, whether it's scientific
but
or religious.
But I think probably, like, if we're talking like maybe, you know, 3 or 4,000 years ago, but even then, who knows? Like, I mean, you know, I mean, it's Passover, so I'm a little bit, Jews and Egypt centric right now. But were they, you know, how much of that was religious and how much of that was like, you know what, we need to build some shit here. And who better to enslave than this minority, this ethnic minority?
Right.
You know, like it's not because that they pray to one God and we're polytheists. It's that they're an ethnic minority, and people we can enslave them. I mean, so I think there's probably incidents, localized incidents, but when you start to talk about like states functioning and use the use of religion, I think that's the key. They're using religion. Religion is not the impetus.
Right, and also the last point I'd make is like if you wanted to look at a specific area where religion, like a certain deployment of religion, could specifically really harm people, like as an example, women's rights in many places. That's a very distinct, even that I would still politicize and not look at primary ideologically, but the implications of those beliefs in people's cultural practices is a lot more relevant than trying to figure out geopolitics.
Appreciate the phone call.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Calling from a 305.
Calling from a 305.
Calling from a 305.
Hello.
Hello. Who's this?
Hey, this is Ryan in Austin.
Ryan in Austin, can you turn down? However you're listening to the show.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Hey, I just wanted to get your take on the Beto O'Rourke trying to unseat Ted Cruz situation and what you think he needs to do to, I guess, appeal to Texas voters.
I mean, I'm... Okay, I'm going to let you go and answer your question. I'm in favor of it. I don't know what he needs to do to appeal to Texas voters. Ted Cruz seems to be pretty unpopular. I'm not sure what he needs to do. Maybe we'll hear from John from San Antonio over the coming weeks.
I don't agree with Ted Cruz, but I want him in the Senate because I want an open exchange of ideas.
calling from a 928 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
What's good, Sam? It's your man, NJPW, man. What's going on, Sam? Mike, how you living, man?
How are you?
You know what? I'm really good, but I just had a couple things.
Yep.
You know, Michael. You know, I made that joke that caught on with you actually because you changed your Twitter profile.
That's right.
The Yacoubian left.
The Yacoubian left.
Know?
I love it. I'm all
the
over
Yacoubian
it.
Yacoubian left. But you know what? I'm gonna keep it real with you, man. Like, that's what's going on with Jimmy Dore trying to ally with Mike Cernovich and things like that. It's the way he frames this idea that Trump. Well, not Hillary. To me, honest man, that's some Yacoubian left shit, man.
Yeah, it is.
You know? It really is. And yeah. Not even in a, I'm not joking or
no,
tongue-in-cheek, man. That is a Yacoubian left type deal.
I agree.
You know?
I agree.
And,
one second. Just define for me Yacoubian
left. It's your true nature, Sam.
No, I know it's my true nature. There's no doubt.
He was saying, no.
But wait, I'm asking the caller to define Yacoubian left.
Yacoubian left is honestly because what happens is I hear Michael Brooks, he does all these great impersonations of black leaders and you know, the Nation of Islam types. And, you know, for those that don't know that, you know, y'all white folks were created in a lab by the scientist Yacoub, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it's all, you know, ridiculous. But I use it. I've said it recently just as a joke. But like I said, looking at what Jimmy Dore did, I'm like, you know what? Nah, these are some individuals who I feel, you know, hide behind certain leftist ideals, but in reality, they do have some of that, you know, some of that pro-whiteness in their blood. That's just how I feel.
All right. So now, I will say this. I think calling it a lab is a little over the top. There was a couple of beakers, but I would not say it was a lab.
I got to say.
That seems it makes it much more formal, I think, than it was.
I got to correct. Actually in a cave specifically. Jacob was a giant-headed mad scientist.
Call, Michael?
Were there pigs
remember
involved?
Remember my first call, Michael? I said there were some complaints about the Wi-Fi in the Yacoubian caves, man, and you guys haven't done anything to help get that sorted out.
Yeah, you could hear that with our libertarian callers. They haven't even left the caves.
Obama wanted to put extra money in the stimulus for that. Right. And
I'm president of everybody's devils, Asiatic black man, everyone.
All right, go ahead. What else you got?
This is the second thing I just wanted to talk about. If you guys are the chat, definitely wanted to hear. But I actually, after my relationship ended, I actually roomed with two full-on Trump supporters living in San Jose, California, that I lived with briefly. And I didn't want to know if y'all wanted to hear some of my thoughts and observations.
I would love to hear how that worked out.
Sure. Okay, so basically it's like this, man. Like, you know, I am a veteran, you know, a veteran of Operation Enduring Freedom. I was with the United States Air Force, Security Forces, you know. I served, 5.5 years. Thank God it was only that, because I ain't gonna lie, I did not want to go to Iraq. It was looking bad out there, so I got out when I could get out. You know, after going to Afghanistan, etc. So that's just my perspective, you know, in terms of when I talk about war and this and that. And the thing is that living with them, one of them was a white guy who was, you know, quarter Mexican. The other one, to be honest, is one of my childhood friends. He's Mexicano, you know.
I'm a black Latino from South America. So, you know, my dad's American, so I don't have a cool immigrant story, whatever. But nonetheless, basically the observations is, I guess if I can make it as quick as I can, is this. With the one guy, I call him Chef, he wasn't racist, you know. He was not racist. He was actually on the Alex Jones tip, man. And what he would do is he'd be on YouTube watching these conspiracy theories and just parroting Alex Jones word for word. And, you know, that's when I saw, like, you know, Alex Jones has a real influence on this guy.
Yep.
and his callers. And as much as, you know, I'm going to be honest, if you've been on the internet, you've known since 03, 04, 05, Alex Jones full of shit.
Yep.
But and I was noticing that he's legitimized now. And this guy who, you know, if to be honest, I don't mean to hate, but, you know, I have a degree, low education and no, you know, no desire to know the facts, but something that explains why he is in the position that he is in his life.
Yes,
that's it.
You know, and I don't mean to be a hater. You know,
no, but you know,
I don't mean to be a hater.
I have said,
I think it's charitable.
I've said many times that if Alex Jones didn't exist, the CIA would invent him, or the wealthy would invent him, because rather than actually looking at all the reasons why people are dispossessed in many respects that are right in front of their faces, that are out in the open. Alex Jones gives a secret truth that explains everything. It's the Bilderbergs. It's the globalists. It's it does in many respects. It's not unlike I had mentioned the other day, like the appeal of a fundamental religion. There are certain things, like, you don't have to think about this. Here's the answer. It's very simple. They're in charge of everything, and they control it all, and the globalists want to do this, and that's it. Bingo, bango, I've got it wrapped up for you. Now we're just going to cut to a vitamin commercial, and that's it. And exactly. That is – and so it has an appeal, and it's also – it's digestible. It's pre-digested. It's done in, like, cartoon form, essentially, so that you can understand, like, you know, like, it's just why are they evil? Why are they doing this? Because they're the evil guys. That's it. Bottom line.
Yeah.
End of story.
And then, you know, the second person I lived with was a childhood friend, man. You know, he's Mexican himself, but he's Mexican only in the sense of that's sort of like, you know, what he checks off. He sees himself more as a Native American. This guy is pretty well cultured in terms of, you know, I'm a native, you know, I don't subscribe to any colonial bullshit. You know, I don't speak Spanish. So what? Spanish is still a European language for some of my people, et cetera. He's not dumb. You know, he's not dumb. But there was this idea, you know, and then I've seen this among certain quiet Trump Mexican supporters here in California. There's this idea that there's this divide that Mexicans from Mexico and Mexicans from the United States, like, oh, you're not Mexican enough if you do this and that and the other. And sometimes there's some, you know, within that community, like I said, I'm from Brazil. So, you know, I can't, you know, say someone's right or wrong. But sometimes within an immigrant community and then within a community that's native to it, there's this idea of, well, you're not this enough, not that enough. And I can relate to some extent, like, oh, you're not black enough, you know.
Right.
But at the same time, there does, you know, I saw this when I was living in Arizona on the border, you know, that, yeah, you get some Mexican Trump supporters because some of it I felt was, well, they're here, I'm here, I'm living okay. Why should you have what I got, you know? And the another part of it is, especially since the guy I've known since childhood, like I said, these dudes aren't racist. Not in a sense of, I think you're better than me, but definitely racial in terms of, well, these people, why are they complaining? With both of them, it was, you know, Black Lives Matter. Like, there was this idea that, oh, there wasn't this type of racism before. You know, they all brought it to the forefront and this and that. It's like just voicing what the obvious is. Means that it's black folks' problem that, you know, we're experiencing this and, you know, trying to make change with it. Or the last thing I'll say is the day that the youngster was killed during the protests, you know?
Yep.
The first reaction that the white guy had was, good, kill these motherfucking protesters, man. I said, what? Like, I couldn't believe it. And all these thoughts were really kept only in-house because, man, this is the Bay Area, man. We don't play that shit out here, you know? But how his true feelings were was that if you protest, somehow you're either doing something wrong or, you know, or these people who block the freeways, et cetera. the very expressions that brought us equality, that brought us a voice, that brought us civil rights, that brought us individuals like Cesar Chavez, all of a sudden are negative now. And that type of cultural shift that the right has been very successful in pushing that narrative on individuals who would it would actually benefit, it actually is kind of painful to watch.
Yeah.
And look, I'm going to just keep it real. I'm glad the majority of black people don't go for that shit. You know, we don't. And like I can honestly say that there'd be a few that do, but most of us don't. And, you know, I am thankful that we don't fall into that trap.
It would be a real problem.
Well, that would be a disaster if black people voted as dumbly as other people. Whoa, then we would be done.
Yeah, honestly.
Well, can I just say something to the caller, though, real quick?
Yes, please, Mr. President.
All right, 6 p.m. tonight on TMBS, the cartoon debut, first Michael Brooks Show cartoon. Not saying who the cartoon is of, but 6 p.m., check it out. Good points, brother. But number three, you don't sound black enough.
All right. Well,
you know what? Let me put it to you like this. Hold on. Before I end my call, the same way I end every time I enter the chat, I always say this: the black man is God, and at the end of the day, Sam Seed is a 10%er, man. I holla at y'all.
Law Akbar.
Appreciate the call. Calling from a 206 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Sam, this is Kem Champion. How you doing?
Kem Champion, long time no hear from. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. Happy Passover, I guess, right?
Yes, thank you. Maybe Good Friday, although I have a feeling you don't celebrate. But go ahead.
I'm an atheist, of course.
Yes,
not.
I know.
I want to thank you for allowing me to visit the studio back in the fall. That was a lot of fun.
It was our pleasure.
And I wanted to thank you for making sure that Michael wouldn't be there when I was there.
I do my best. I know I get a sense of what's going to make for a fun trip.
Oh, yeah, please. Always give me a heads up. I never want to have to shake this guy's hand.
I know you talked a little bit about, this is just a smaller point, but Washington's voting laws that they've changed this year.
Yep.
Because of the change in the state Senate. Just a clarification. A lot of the reports are saying that the automatic voter registration for Washington is making it like Oregon and some of these other states that are doing that. That's not true. In Washington, since I think 1992, we don't ask any sort of Social Security number or any kind of citizenship data to get a driver's license. You just have to show that you live in the state and you can get a driver's license and somehow prove that you're of age. So that allows, you know, non-citizens to get driver's licenses in Washington state. But obviously, you can't use the driver's license rolls to roll over into voting rolls like they do in Oregon and some of these other states where most states ask, you know. So what they did, and because I think FAA for years has threatened to say, well, you can't use your driver's license to get on a plane, but they keep on allowing extensions for Washington State, so it's not actually into effect, is that they created what's known as an enhanced driver's license in Washington State, which a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of people use, because you have to pay more for it and you have to provide more documentation. But allows you to get into Canada and stuff like that. So what they really did is that bill just rolled over the enhanced driver's license rolls over into the voters' rolls, which is probably less than 5% of all driver's licenses. So, you know, it's a good idea, but we have to, you know, choose one. You know, we would have to give people essentially what California does is a second-class driver's license to non-citizens. Because it says in California they can get driver's licenses, but it says that this cannot be used for travel purposes or something of that sort, right on the driver's license. And obviously, the non-citizen community in Washington don't want that,
right.
And so we haven't changed that. So clear. But one of the really great things about it, the rules is that we had the voter, what we call the Washington Voter Rights Act.
Let me just wait a second, like Kim Champion. Let me just clarify here.
Yeah.
So that system that is used for an enhanced driver's license is being applied to everyone's entering onto the voter rolls, but you're not actually imposing more requirements on the driver's license. Is that correct?
Well, then we just have a regular driver's license in Washington State, an enhanced driver's license.
Do you need an
enhanced
driver's license for this automatic voter registration?
Driver's license has no citizenship data, so you can't roll that over into the voter rolls.
I understand.
So how do they
actually roll it into the voter rolls? My understanding is that they use that process, but they don't actually start issuing new licenses.
They don't. Well, they are not issuing any new licenses. All they're doing is rolling over the enhanced driver's license rolls into the voter rolls. Not the total driver's license rolls into the voter rolls. You understand what I'm saying?
So not everybody.
The vast majority is getting rolled over.
Okay, so the vast majority of people who get a driver's license are not being rolled over into the voting rolls.
No.
Oh, that's problematic, isn't it?
We have this great thing that non-citizens get the exact same driver's license as everybody else, and you know, don't freak out the cops when they get pulled over and stuff like that. You know,
but most people don't.
You got to pick your poison.
Do most people choose the enhanced driver's license?
It costs more, but people who travel, which are probably people who are more likely to vote anyways. Are more often the people that have the enhanced driver's license, because someday the FAA will require all of us that travel internationally to, and I think maybe even domestically, to have the enhanced driver's license.
Okay, I see. All right. Well, I appreciate that that clarification. Should also say, though, in Maryland, the legislature passed automatic voter registration. And Hogan may veto it, but it doesn't matter because the bill passed in both chambers with a veto-proof majority. So that's good stuff. All right, Camp Champion.
Can I talk about something else?
Got to be quick.
Nope.
Super quick.
Nope.
Super quick. I got 12 other people on the line.
Goodbye.
I wanted to just bring up, you say you were going to talk about it with Ari Berman, the Maryland case, Benesek versus Lamone, the Democratic gerrymandering case.
Right.
That was, I think, Wednesday, and oral arguments. I don't know if you read through them. But the very interesting thing, a lot of the initial conversation, first and half of the oral arguments, is all about whether they should even be hearing this case, because any sort of resolution of it is going to basically be moved because the 2020 redistricting will happen. But the second half of the conversation, it was very interesting with Kennedy. Kennedy basically asked the exact same question that he asked in Gill v. Whitford, which is the Wisconsin one from the fall.
And that question is, if I understand, that question is, how do we measure whether or not a district, is there a formula that we can use to measure whether or not a district is drawn in a fair way, essentially?
No. That was the main focus of the conversation in the Maryland case, and the thing that Kennedy brought up that was the exact same thing he brought up in Gill, is he asked the state attorneys, well, if there was a statute on the books mandating that redistricting was to be done in favor of one party or another, would that be unconstitutional discrimination? And in both cases, the state attorneys said, well, no. And then this is getting at intent, and he said, if there's a clear intent in favoring a party, and he joked that, so if you hide your intent by not explicitly putting partisan advantage in the statute or state constitution, you're okay with discriminating against people, and which people laughed at, according to the transcript. But he asked the exact same question in Gill v. Whitford, or phrased it differently. And so I think, who knows, you're reading tea leaves. But I think you could see something really narrow along with what Breyer kind of put forward in Gill v. Whitford as far as a very long, like, 5-point test for unconstitutional partisan gerrymandering. I don't know if you could look through the opinion. He goes through 5-point test. He poses it as a question, but he's really just proposing it to the court of, well, this is a manageable standard that we could propose. So if we do see something, I think it'll be probably along those lines.
Okay. All right. I appreciate the call. Thanks, man.
All right.
Bye.
Good day.
Well, the big issue for Kennedy has always been in gerrymandering is that there was no, he did not know if it was possible, supposedly, to come up with a formula for that. And the big sort of like change for that people are anticipating is that, and we spoke about this, there was this concept of wasted votes, and some social scientists have developed what they perceive is a good measure for whether or not something's been excessively gerrymandered. Rob from Austin, should we try to reframe gun control as an immigration issue? That is to say, conservatives are concerned about illegal immigration largely due to drugs coming up from the South. But the other side of that transaction is weapons and cash going from the U.S. to the South. So by enacting stricter gun control, we can disincentivize cross-border drug trade. Yeah. Conservatives are concerned about illegal immigration largely due to drugs coming up from the South. Guess what? That's not true. Unless your definition of drugs are brown people, that is not true.
Right.
Hey, everyone gets their kicks somehow.
Michael's hairline. Question for Michael. After working for Sam all these years and talking to H. John Benjamin today, how does it feel to be around people who actually get paid for the voices they do?
I do.
Jonathan Armstead. Sam, will you have any interviews from the Tort Conference next week? Yes. That's where I'm going. Also, is there going to be any Wicca-inspired April Fool's Day hijinks next week, which caused the streams to cross with a parallel universe, or will we have to wait until Friday the 13th or Halloween? Unfortunately, April Fool's falls on a Sunday, so it would be very awkward for us to do something on April Fool's. I mean, we could, but nobody would hear it. Gabe from Chicago, you've arrived promptly for a game. You've arrived promptly for your date, but you find once again you've been stood up. Just as you're getting ready to demand a $1.50 refund on the lemonade you just finished and storm out of the Olive Garden, and out of breath, Michael Brooks rushes through the door, trailed by Donald Trump and Henry Kissinger in shackles. Sam, the last bus to the gulag is leaving. There's only one seat left. It's time to decide who gets the last seat. Oh, and I forgot to mention, because Michael needs to escort the prisoners to the gulag, you'll have to spend the rest of your night with whomever he leaves behind. This includes dinner, ice skating, and a viewing of Gnomo and Juliet, accompanied by an uncomfortable and poorly executed... Okay.
That's a very elaborate question. Yeah.
Yes. I would send you. Contagious Chameleon. Michael, you said you're going to interview Mark Blythe. Ask him what he thinks about voting for a Green New Deal since he was on the other side of that conversation.
I did not bring that up. It is already interviewed.
Classless Creative. We all got teased by seeing Cliff's headshot yesterday. It's good we finally got our fix today, but it's always tough when mommy and daddy fight at the dinner table. Rob Cully, if you want to see something funny, our foreign minister, the bumble idiot that is Boris, got a bollocking for being sexist in the House of Commons yesterday. You can hear him mumbling sorry like the giant manta.
We'll play that on TMBS maybe.
Oh, where is that? Let's pull that.
Okay.
I saw that. I love Sarah Palin. I heard that Obama moved into the same neighborhood as brother Farrakhan. Does Obama have a comment?
Hell yes.
I heard Michael's talking about trauma and epigenetics yesterday. Sounds like someone's watching interviews with Brother Polight and Lord Jamar again.
What?
I don't know what that means. All right, here is Boris Johnson. He is getting taken to task about his, I guess this is a, about his sexist comments.
He refers to a woman with sort of in an undignified way.
And here he is. Getting basically dressed down and then having to... I'm sorry.
Secretary. I passionately agree. It is the most astonishing. It is the most... Say no, says the Labour front bench. That's their attitude. That's their attitude. Isn't that extraordinary? Isn't that extraordinary? This is an institution. Say no, says the noble and learned lady, the Baroness... Whatever it is, I can't remember what it is. Newgy. What an extraordinary thing.
Order. I don't want to be unkind or discourteous to the Foreign Secretary, but I say on advice as the clerks swivel round to me, two things. First of all, we don't name call in this chamber. And secondly, I'm dealing with the matter. The right honourable gentleman will listen and benefit from listening. Secondly, we do not address people by the titles of their spouses. The Shadow Foreign Secretary has a name. And it's not Lady something.
I'm sorry.
We know what her name is. And it is inappropriate and frankly sexist to speak in those terms. And I'm not having it in this chamber. That is the end of the matter. No matter how senior a member,
That parlance is not legitimate. It will not be allowed, and it will be called out on it. And I require no chundering from a secretary position from any occupant of the Treasury bench. I've said what the position is, and believe me, that is the end of the matter. I hope I've made the position extremely clear to people who are not well informed about such matters. Mr. Stephen Kinnock.
Question 14, sir.
Mr. Secretary, can I crave your indulgence just to prostrate myself before you and to apologise for any inadvertent sexism or discourtesy that you may have deemed me to be to have been guilty of, and I heartily tender my apologies to the right honourable lady opposite if she was offended by what I said, and I meant no harm, Mr. Speaker, and I apologise unreservedly if I've offended the feelings of the right honourable lady.
But prostrate myself. I like that.
I mean, you know, it was the functional equivalent of, for whatever reason, there's some people who would refer to Nikki as Nikki Cedar, and that is not. She never adopted my last name, and it was always like that was my grandmother. My grandmother would refer to herself. My great grandfather was my grandfather's name was Samuel. He died before I was born. That's why I was named after him. She would refer to herself as Mrs. Samuel Cedar. It's a little bit of throwback.
Yeah,
you do that, right, Jamie? You do that.
Oh, I do what?
You refer to yourself as Mrs. Sean. Right.
All the time. Yeah, InfoSec on his last name there.
Right. Well, that's why I said Mrs. Sean.
That's why I don't use it.
Boris Johnson reminds me of when I was helping my dad coach my younger brother's basketball team, and there'd be kids who just could not wait in line to for their time to take a layup, and they just can't behave themselves. And Boris Johnson is just still that. He's still those kids.
It's funny. J.P. Weaver, your discussion with Cliff. Isn't Michael willing to find common cause with oppressors of women? Same thing?
Yeah, totally, if you have no ability to think.
Not a general. Yesterday on Michael's bro edition of the Majority Report, Michael and the bros worry that the phrase toxic masculinity is alienating some good bros from the left.
Yep.
And Michael, who 100% will never get pregnant, still concerned that having a socialism that is too concerned with a strict line on women's choice will alienate bros in the global South. What happens when you give millions of workers power and their opinion is that women shouldn't control their bodies? That won't become policy, right? It's okay, bro. Michael's not concerned.
Okay. I'm going to wrap this. I've never said in terms of policy. That's number one, and I'm not going to comment on it again. And number I think that verbiage and that language is not effective. That was the point. Anyways, thanks for the missive.
I'm going to have to go back and watch this and see what I think now.
I wish I had my
recycling drama. Come on, don't indulge them, Jamie.
Well, I think this is new drama, no?
It's
or maybe
like
it's not drama.
It to be.
Maybe I just got to watch it and I'll see that it's fine.
Well, either way, I will have no response.
Michael is done with the topic. He's not going to refer to it anymore.
Rap,
you're all
correct.
Taking him out of context.
All
you
out of
don't
context.
Don't understand Michael at all.
You don't understand me. It's the equivalent of a professional suicide bombing.
The DX fool. Hi, folks, and happy war on Easter, you Jew boys. Also, happy 5th anniversary to All In with Chris and happy 14th anniversary of the remains of Air America Radio. Oh, that's true. Oh, my gosh. What? Today is my 14-year anniversary of being in radio. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right.
We'll save it for 15-year. That's the...
Got to be quick.
Well, we'll have your board fixed by then.
The golden anniversary. Is that what it's called?
Got to be quick.
Anyway, I wonder what Ben Shapiro's GPA was when he got accepted to UCLA and began writing the conservative student paper there. Does he think being a syndicated columnist at age 17 trumps David Hogg's unplanned activism at 18? Also, last year's coupon code was majority 30. I don't think there is a coupon code this year. I think it's going to be site-wide, so check it out. They'll be automatically marked down. So check it out. Go, Nick from Manitoba. Hey, Sam, great show today. Do you remember that libertarian debate you did with Dave Smith? Vaguely. Fast-talking, incoherent guy. Well, I noticed he was on Joe Rogan this past week with his podcast, Team Legion of Skanks. Also, it's clear who won that debate. Eh, Bucko? Clean your rooms and stay sweet. Leftist European, it's sad, like the social cohesion in America is under pressure. Sad. Thames Darwin. Sam, is it me or is it John Benjamin look like a little bit like a Jewish Terry Richardson? I'm just kidding. It's a little Passover humor. Have a Zin Pesach.
Brendan made that observation too in the office.
Train boy, congratulations on managing to be on MSNBC without channeling the spirit of Dr. Sebastian Gorka. Thank you. I appreciate that. Bravo-matic. Sam, do you need me to shoot an email over to Mark Green just to let him know that he still needs to send payment for John for the intro work? Probably just an oversight. Also, when we have Lionel on as a guest. Chris Burdick, Benjamin's such a big deal now, he can hire servants to let his dishes pile up and then throw them out. Blackjack Leo, I hear David Frum hates Michael Bolton. Never Bolton, but listen to these better songs by John Bolton. How can we be soldiers? Time of War Tenderness. Said I killed you, but I lied. And when a man loves a mustache. Habers Malo, I think I gave Jimmy the idea to that pro-marijuana after-school special of a song. I'm sorry. Historical conditions influence ideology, institutions around it, but our religion ideology influences the way we see and talk about the world. The Isle of Patmos is where the big-headed scientist docked his boat in exile. To be honest, Nation of Islam's just-so stories about the eugenicist creation of whiteness is not too different from the Calvinist stories of Manifest Destiny. And great call on Alex Jones, too. The other part of Jones is his story removes the listener from responsibility the possibility of self-empowerment. Indeed. Indeed. All right. We got time for... two or three more calls. Calling from a 510 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Sam. This is Ibrahim from Oakland. I've called you a few times.
Hi, Ibrahim. Go ahead.
Hey. So I just want to talk about Lindsay Shepherd today. I don't know if you guys are familiar with her.
I don't think she's right wing.
Don't know.
Yeah, okay. So she got known because I think it was last year she was teeing a class at this university in Canada. It's like Wilfrid Laurier University.
Okay.
And she's like in the communications department. And so in this class, she started showing this debate with Jordan Peterson. And then some of her students complained. And so then the heads of the department like took her in and was like, hey, you can't do that, blah, blah, blah. She recorded it and then released it in a bunch of free speech people got mad. And then the university apologized, you know, and she became like sort of a well-known free speech warrior. So then now she's like she's like the president of this like free speech organization at their university.
Okay.
And so one of the first things they decided to do was have this person, Faith Gouldy, on. Now, Faith Gouldy is like someone who she used to work for the Rebel Media. And then the Rebel Media fired her because she was like too alt-right for them.
Oh,
so
okay.
She like started going on these podcasts with like the Daily Stormer, and she started doing some really like overtly fascist stuff. So they had to get rid of her.
All right, we got to be a little quick.
Of course,
right,
that means that.
What's the point?
Yeah, the point is that the event got shut down, and then this person, Lindsay Shepherd, who's like another Dave Rubin classical liberal person, came out today and was like, oh yeah, I'm not left wing anymore because the left is crazy. And the thing that she said specifically was why she was leaving the left was that she said that people don't understand that, this was in her words, that they don't understand the difference between a white nationalist and a white supremacist. So she was saying that there's some kind of a difference, and that's why she doesn't consider herself left-wing anymore.
Well, guess what?
And so
I would be in total agreement with her. She is not a leftist anymore. She is she is firmly implanted on the right. And I'm also going to make this prediction. Someone is about to make some cash.
So my whole point is like there's a clear delineation between people who like they start with Jordan Peterson, then they become free speech warriors, then they become like alt-right apologists. And it happens very quickly.
Yeah,
and you see it over and over and over again in different people, and it just start, middle, finish.
It's a problem.
It's just it's a pipeline.
Yeah, I appreciate your point. I'm going to look into that, Lindsay Shepherd. Calling from a 215 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Sam. This is Ray. I'm calling from Philly. I just simply want to say that leave it to the very greedy to between Monday Thursday in Passover to take over the entire Puerto Rican public school system in one fell swoop. And it, these people can't even find like the irony in it, because they are freeing students from failing schools, and they are holding the Last Supper for public education.
Jeez. All right. Well, I appreciate the call. I'll check into that. All right. Last call. Calling from an 814 area code.
Oh, crap. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing? You there?
Yes. Hello.
Oh, cool. I'm Alex. I'm a master's student. I just recently discovered you guys. Just wanted to say I really like you and was appreciative of dunking on Dave Rubin and Ben Shapiro, because I was starved for that.
Well,
kind
you've
of
come for the right place, then, I would say. What else is on your mind? Got to be quick.
I was wondering, because I'm sort of new to just listening to political podcasts and jumping around all these
Well,
stuff.
Let me save you some time. We're significantly better than the other ones, so don't waste any of your time. You found the right place.
Well, I was actually going to ask you about one of the other ones, because you sort of made some joking about the Pod Save Crooked Media guys, and they were the first ones I listened to, because my dad, of all people, my pastor father, recommended them to me.
I
was wondering if there was like an actual like beef you had with them?
No, I got to be honest. I have never listened to them in any meaningful way. I think from my perspective politically, I find, just broadly speaking, that the Obama people were politically and ideologically deficient in a lot of ways. And in ways that they still cannot see. And I would say ideologically in deficient in the way that they dealt with the financial crisis. And politically and slash maybe ideologically problematic and failures in the way that they did not hold the Bush administration accountable for anything. I'm not just talking about having trials about the Iraq war, but had Obama not had this attitude of we cannot, Democrats, broadly speaking, do not get into power and then pursue policies that are both good policies and also will maintain their power.
Gotcha.
I can tell you, Donald Trump the other day was talking about how I don't know where this came up, but Donald Trump was talking about how I can't believe Obama didn't, left me all these vacancies on these judgeships. Barack Obama did not, because of his, in his mind, lack of ideology, right? He does not see the importance of fulfilling the federal judiciary in a way that someone who understands how Republicans and conservatives will. That was not a priority for them. And they did leave a lot of those. I mean, it's just a fact. They were very slow to nominate judges. Now, they were obstructed for a long period of time. And ultimately,
I was going to ask if they were obstructed.
They were obstructed. But ultimately, the Senate got rid of the filibuster for those judgeships. And there should have been a long list already prepared. But there wasn't, because it was not a priority. I will also tell you that from a political standpoint, and I'm jumping all over the place here because this is just off the top of my head, the Obama people in the run up to the 2008 general election, they basically put out the word for funders across the board. You do not give money to outside groups. You do not give money to outside groups. There's a lot of people who also wanted Obama for America to be spun off. They kept it in-house. They basically quashed it. They did not want there to be grassroots power. And part of that is is politics, and part of that is ideology. And I don't have time to parse out what is what in that, because they go hand in hand.
Yeah, and this is the sort of stuff that I, as a 24-year-old that was in 2008 in eighth grade, this is the sort of stuff I miss out on.
Right, exactly.
So
there's a lot of those things that I think the Obama people are blind to. And it was not to say that Obama's not a great guy, very nice, whatever. But the opportunity he had the temerity, and I don't think it was just temerity. I mean, this guy came into office in 2008, came into office in January 2008, was talking about so-called entitlement reform. And it took basically the Democratic Party to push him off that. He was offering cuts to Social Security as late as 2011. Maybe even
didn't he have to be pushed on to being pro-LGBTQ rights? Like, wasn't that a thing?
He was anti. He came into, I can tell you this. His perspective was this. If he was advising Martin Luther King, he would not say at that time, you know, in the fight for civil rights, to pursue anti-miscegenation laws. He definitely was not out in the forefront of this, and LGBTQ activists really pushed him hard on this, and maybe Joe Biden did too, inadvertently. But that, to me, is a case of him sort of like wanting to make sure that the country was ready. And maybe
do you think he started in more of a mainstream left position for 2008 and then he had to be pushed further and further as the mainstream walks further and further to the left
on specifically on marriage equality? Yes.
Yeah. Just in general.
Yes. And I would say that's
like
true of all. That's all. That's
general
true.
Issues with that how was, he approached some things.
Yeah. That was true of all Democratic leaders when it comes to that issue, but on economic ones, yes. And, you know, his support for the TPP, his relationship with the banks, his perspective on the knowledge that, the elite in this country, possessed, I think, was all part and parcel of who he was. And so he can't make certain critiques that I think, we're missing. And the party is moving, you know, it's way to the left of where he was at that time. And in part because of him, I think, but, because of reaction.
Well, one thing I will say for the crooked, media guys is they've done a really good job of hiring people that aren't them. Like they have a really good podcast with, DeRay McKesson, one of the Black Lives Matter guys.
Yeah. Well, but DeRay McKesson is really... also, listen, DeRay McKesson is also one of these guys who I think is, you know, I don't think he's a bad person, but his critique is and where he comes from is missing a big part of our politics, and that is like some notion of, and I don't have time to go into this right now, but McKesson is a good example of someone who is fighting for social justice, but is missing an entire economic critique that is built into that. And so that's for another day. But yeah, I mean, as a media enterprise, I like some of the people they've hired. And
check out my show for impressions of all crooked media programs.
Oh, I mean, I've heard all your impressions of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
That's part of why I was listening. It's like, does he hate them or are they just poking fun?
All right. Appreciate the call.
Both.
Jeff, bye.
Thank you. Bye.
I don't hate them.
We'll take one more phone call.
It's kind of whack.
Call really? From a 718 area code. 718. Going once. Going twice. Gone. And you are the final caller of the week before vacation. And all right, we're going to take a bunch of IMs. Folks, I'm sorry. We're out of time for calls. Quagmire. So yesterday I came face to face with Gorka in Scottsdale, but I totally choked, so I didn't get any video of me calling him a fake doctor. I'm sorry, y'all, but I can tweet you some mildly accusing clips of him talking about his father and the communists to you if you like. It was at a campaign event for Kelly Ward running for Senate in Arizona. They talked about a lot about the wall and how God anointed Trump to be president. Wild stuff. Yes, and heretical Christian. Didn't Dave Rubin refer to David Frum as one of the liberal voices he has on? Maybe. The Novich layer. Always loved the Mama Bush impression. Hugo Ball, too. Happy Pesach, Majority Reporters. The best Benjamin deep cut jam is the short-lived Dick and Paula celebrity special, which takes place in Worcester and features Andy Kindler. I remember that. A Square. MR Familia. Happy Passover, Easter, whatever you celebrate. Thanks for Jeb Bush getting his little licks clip. Tom Cat. Cuck-a-doodle-doo, MR. I was out in Portsmouth canvassing for the Labor Party in Portsmouth last night. First time doing it. It was fun. Owen Jones bought me a pint. Michael, he said, sorry, he's busy with the local elections cover, but he'll try to get back to you very soon. Sam, you definitely got to check out Archer.
Really? Oh,
that's so funny. One of the funniest TV shows in years. Jamie, good Guardian article. Have a good Easter.
Thank you.
Three more here. Four more. Censor sweep. Sam, I'm worried that Benjamin has hidden the ultimate Easter egg in today's show after he briefly mentions you in his upcoming book. An endnote will lead you to discover that during the entirety of his appearance, he was eating a red, delicious apple. Slippery fish. I'm running for a spot on our village government next week up here in Vermont. How about a shofar for good luck? It's broken, but
good luck.
Two of us running, both in our 20s, have a good chance to take down conservative board members who've been running the village for decades. That would be awesome. Attorney Andrew, still cleaning up the vomit. I saw someone set up an apparently official GoFundMe for Andrew McCabe's legal bills. Then I saw it raised nearly $450K. Oh,
jeez. Oh, my God. People are fucking insane.
What the hell is wrong with people? This guy is a career attorney for the FBI whose main focus prior to 2017 was creating elaborate mechanisms to entrap brown people so the FBI's terrorism prevention numbers could stay up.
Yep.
Plus, the dude doesn't need anybody's money. He's rich.
Yeah, these people are just insane.
Thing is, in precisely the same waters as platforming from, having resistance dirt on Trump or disease. Hating him is not a special or unique, but it's apparently a great grift. To that caller, Michael doesn't hate Pod Save America. I hate Pod Save America. And the final IM of the day and the week and before vacation.
Goodbye.
Mo Brains. Come on, Sammy. Even Reagan worked with Bin Laden to beat the Soviets. But seriously, folks, Russiagate is mostly propaganda quarterbacked by California Democrats. DeFi represents Solwell, although that money laundering trail seems promising. Okay, folks, make sure you check out next week's shows. They'll be all new. We'll be back live a week from Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the lie.